Believe it's Clive Ball. Right now, it's time for Nick Abbott.
Thank you, James. A packed programme tonight. We will talk about dry January and whether it is worth doing unless you go dry all year. The King is making a documentary about our relationship to our planet and how we must act fast to protect it and, by extension, ourselves. We'll get a weather update. There's a very cold snap hits that could last a while. We'll hear the latest from Switzerland on that terrible fire and on Anthony Joshua's crash and get the latest from America. But first, Keir Starmer says this year will be better than the last. His work will start bearing fruit. But will it? That and more with me, Nick Abbott, after the new news at 10 on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the King says a fire at a Swiss ski resort where around 40 people have died is a nightmarish tragedy. About 115 others are in hospital with significant injuries, including severe burns. Hundreds of people were seeing in the new year when the fire broke out at Camp Montana. Times reporter David Chazan says an investigation is underway.
Witnesses' accounts point at a tragic accident, probably caused by a sparkler or a firework lit in the basement of this very popular bar called Le Constellation, which set the ceiling on fire and then spread very rapidly to the rest of the building.
Zoran Mamdani's addressed crowds in New York after being sworn in as the city's new mayor. The 34-year-old Democrat, the first Muslim leader of America's biggest city and the youngest mayor in generations.
We will transform the culture of City Hall from one of no to one of how. We will answer to all New Yorkers, not to any billionaire or oligarch who thinks they can buy our democracy.
A Labour MP has warned the high street will collapse without substantial changes to business rates. Many firms' rateable value will rise from April. Rachel Maskell told LBC hospitality on average in her home city of York will see a 41% increase in the tax.
The problem has been that we've seen the revaluation coming at the same time, and that's just pushed people to the edge. And that's why I'm pleading with the government that they do bring around proper reform of business rates.
The Treasury has said it's offering clear support to help businesses recover and grow. A man in his 20s has died in Greater Manchester after a suspected stabbing on New Year's Eve. A man and a woman have been arrested on suspicion of murder after a disturbance in Bury. Weather warnings for snow and ice already in place for northern Scotland will be extended to much of the UK tonight. LBC forecaster John Ketley says Arctic air is to blame.
We've got a big trough of cold air coming down from Lapland, really. So we are seeing these much colder winds swinging south. Now, not to say everybody's going to see some snow, but I think many places will in the next 5 days. But, of course, the main thing is, with this very much colder air, it's going to be much colder at night. So there will be a lot of frost around, a lot of ice.
LBC weather. Snow showers will feed into northern Scotland overnight, and rain with some snow will move across Northern Ireland into Wales, central and some southern parts of England. Windy with a widespread frost, lows of -3 to -6 Celsius. Heavy snow in northern Scotland tomorrow, sunny elsewhere, highs of -2 to -6 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Good evening and a happy new year. Keir Starmer is hoping that this year will be happier for him than the last one was. He said he is frustrated by the slow pace of change, but says that people will begin to feel a sense of hope this year as the economy turns round. He insists that 2026 will be the year that the government's spending decisions, including on the NHS and towns and cities, are going to be felt by the public, that all those difficult decisions will start to bear fruit. Let's talk about this with Joe Twyman. Joe is director of polling agency Delta Poll and joins us on the line now. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Nick.
Does that sound plausible?
Well, if the last 10 to 15 years of British politics have taught us anything, it's that nothing can be guaranteed, but at the same time, nothing can be ruled out. I think it's best described as perhaps wishful briefing. I don't think anyone really knows exactly what's going to happen with the economy because so much of that is dependent on world affairs. One of the reasons we had such a high period of inflation, for instance, was due to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and there was nothing that the government at the time or the government now could do about that. And so he is right that things do need to improve and that crucially people need to feel that things have improved, and it doesn't surprise me that he says the pace of change is too slow. But that doesn't mean that by this time next year, people will feel that things have improved or that things are going to get better in the years running up to the next election.
Yeah, that word feel is important, isn't it? Because things don't necessarily have to get better. They just have to make people feel as though they've got better. And you called it wishful briefing. Isn't that exactly the sort of thing that people have felt has been missing from his leadership, a sense of positivity?
Yes, I think that's right. And so eventually you would expect a movement from whoever was speaking for the government to go from everything is terrible because of the conditions that we were left with to actually know things are going to improve. And then presumably the next stage will be, haven't you noticed that things have improved? But that is a tough sell. Having said that, there are 3.5 years until the next general election. And it's 3.5 years ago that Boris Johnson was talking in interviews about his plans for a third term as prime minister. So an awful lot can happen. But as you say, it's about perception. It's about people feeling in their hearts, in their pockets, that their economic situation is improving, the economic situation of this country is improving. That's the most important factor.
Yes, he came in vowing to stop the chaos of the Tory years, the chaos of Boris Johnson, this clown waving his arms around, followed by Rishi Sunak, who's so out of touch he didn't know how to work a credit card. And then there was the happily brief tenure of Liz the Blunder Truss. Has he actually done that? Stopped the chaos?
I think that's the kind of thing that that history will have to decide. It is true that that, for instance, inflation has fallen from the peak under the Conservative government. But what hasn't changed is people's economic perceptions, at least not yet. We've seen a lot of movement in voting intention over the last 12 months. 12 months ago, Labour were ahead in the polls. They were 4 points ahead of the Conservatives, with Reform just snapping at their heels in third place. But really, for the last few months now, for more than just a few months, Reform has had a healthy lead over all of the other parties. But underlying that, economic perceptions really haven't changed within the last 12 months. There's still a belief that, that the country's own economic situation and individuals' household finances are not doing well and are not going to get better over the next 12 months. And that's a difficult situation for any government to be in.
Yeah, an economy is not a speedboat, though, is it? It's an oil tanker. It takes an enormous amount of time to turn it round. I mean, it will naturally take a while to get over the effects of COVID, Trump's tariffs, the Ukraine war, the continuing effect of Brexit on trade and immigration, and taking over from 14 years of the Tories smashing up the place. Do you think that we've become a little too impatient and aren't prepared to wait a reasonable amount of time for a relatively new government to actually effect a change?
I think one of the things that has been most damaging to public opinion is the effect of the rise in prices of inflation. And this is not just true for Britain, this is true across the world. If you look at the elections that took place all across the world in 2024, we had 64 elections take place, the largest number ever to take place in a single year, 64 national elections. And in 63 of those, the incumbent party lost vote share. And in the majority of those, the incumbent party lost power. And though there were very different circumstances in lots of cases, and some moved from left to right and some moved from right to left and so on and so forth, what they all have in common was that particularly inflation and the cost of living was seen as a major problem. And for governments to turn around and say we have inflation under control, that may be true. But because we went through such a long period of very low inflation, as a nation, as a population, and public opinion has really forgotten what high inflation feels like. And so being told we have inflation under control is one thing, but that doesn't mean that prices are going to fall. It simply means that prices are not going to rise as much as they once did. And so if you're talking about your rise in energy bills in this country, such an important issue at the last election, or the price of eggs in America, such an important issue at their election, in both cases, those prices are not coming down. They're just not rising as fast as they once were. And that is a very pernicious, damaging thing for any government to have to deal with in public opinion terms.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of feeds into that question about patience, doesn't it? Because prices don't all go up at once. And once they're up, they don't tend to come down. I mean, if a reduction in the rate of inflation doesn't mean that prices are dropping. It just means that they're going up less quickly. So a new government can be shouldering the blame for what happened under the previous administration.
Yes, that's right. And the same is true, for instance, when it comes to mortgages and interest rates rising. Many people are on fixed-term mortgages. And throughout the duration of this parliament, people will be coming off those fixed-term mortgages, which in many cases were negotiated under much more favourable interest rates. And they will be seeing their mortgages increase significantly month on month. And so every month, more people are placed in that situation. And that makes perceptions of the economic situation more difficult as well. And having to deal with all of this is a challenge for any government of any colour, which is why in both the United Kingdom, but also in many other countries across the world, those parties that took over in 2024 are themselves now suffering, because people are looking for quick answers. And indeed, in many cases, there are parties and individuals and movements who provide, shall we say, simple, quick answers, often in untested circumstances. But that can be very attractive, very seductive for people looking for change and looking for improvements and looking for their lives to get better.
Yeah. Do you think that much of this is actually to do with personality? Because Boris Johnson was the most popular of the recent leaders, despite failing on almost every measure. He failed on immigration, he failed on inflation, he failed on the NHS, failed on GDP growth, wages, corruption. But he was popular and remains so with a certain demographic because of his bumptiousness, didn't he?
That's true. He was popular among a certain proportion of the public, but he's also very unpopular with others. And his, shall we say, cavalier attitude towards the truth on certain circumstances really damaged him. But it is true that politicians are seen in some cases as not having that personality particularly Boris Johnson, but also someone like Nigel Farage, and in fact Zach Polanski as well, that they are able to demonstrate. They come across as being more, well, shall we say, human than others. And that's not necessarily true. It could all be an act, but it doesn't change the fact that there is a certain desire in the population for that more quote-unquote normal person, rather than the more monosyllabic, machine-like, robotic leaders that we have seen.
What do you make of Reform's polling then? Given that Reform have been topping the polls, as you said, for a few months now, and yet Nigel Farage's popularity is pretty abysmal. Zach Polanski, Ed Davey, Kemi Badenoch are all polling better than Farage. The only leader of a major party polling worse is Keir Starmer. So why do people dislike Farage so much and yet are saying that they're going to vote for his party?
Well, it depends on the question that you ask and the statistic that you quote. What you will find is that lots of people have an opinion about Keir Starmer, and lots of people have an opinion about Nigel Farage, and lots of people are positive about him, and lots of people are negative about him, and so that takes him into net negative territory. And that's not the same for Kemi Badenoch and the others. Kemi Badenoch, for instance, even these years after she became leader, still has around 1 in 5 people saying whether they don't know whether she's doing a good or a bad job. And that means that she doesn't have such a mountain of unpopularity to climb as Keir Starmer does. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that she has people supporting her either. What it does show is that Nigel Farage is not popular among all people, as perhaps he would like to suggest. But more widely, when it comes to Reform's polling, they have been ahead in every published poll in this country since the local election, so for a long time. But since the summer, particularly around the sort of September, we haven't seen much in the way of a major increase in their position. They've fluctuated along between sort of 28 and 32%, depending on specific events. But the long-term trend has been relatively flat. The key question now, and for the next year, and really for the next period until the general election, is whether they can sustain that, or whether, as has been the case in the past, with not just with Reform, but also with the Brexit Party and UKIP before them, whether they can gain a sudden bump as a result of events that that takes them to the next level. That's consistently been the trend in those parties' polling, that they plateau, then they bump up, then they move on. But they could also bump down. And so we don't know what's going to happen over the next 12 months, but it will be very interesting to watch. And we can speculate either way, but it is just speculation. There's a lot of events ahead, and they could pose an enormous challenge for all of the parties, including Reform.
Yeah, and if the government give 16, 17-year-olds the vote, it's quite assuming that they actually go out and use it, which is not to be taken for granted, then it is quite likely that Reform's poll lead will diminish, because young people don't like him and they don't like Reform. His and their support is with the older demographic, isn't it?
There is a contingent, a constituency of young people, particularly young men, who actually are very positive towards Nigel Farage. Now, they're not an enormous number, but no one party among young people, whether it's 16, 17-year-olds or 18, 19, 20-year-olds, no one party has an overwhelming support now, because Labour's support has fallen back so much. I think what 16, 17-year-olds raise, if they are turning out to vote, is that they could make a difference in individual constituencies. I talked before about the fact that Reform are ahead of the main parties. We could quite easily see a situation at the next election where there are a number of constituencies where Reform are battling it out with Labour, Conservative, Lib Dems, Greens, and in some areas Plaid and SNP as well. And that means that the percentage you need to win an individual constituency, given this 5-6-way split, the number that you need to win that constituency could be relatively low, perhaps 20-25%. That means that every vote counts, and even a small number of votes, particularly, for instance, new 16, 17-year-olds entering the electorate, they could have an impact in specific constituencies. And in a close election, that could have an impact on the overall result.
Yeah, the 18 to 24-year-olds, the latest polling is that 18 to 24-year-olds, they support the Labour Party, 30% of them do, and the next most popular are the Greens. What do you put Zach Polanski's sudden success down to?
Well, he's a very experienced broadcaster and communicator, and he's very good at it. He's been doing it for some time. I mean, I was at LBC on election night and spent a period of time with him then, as he was touring around all of these studios before he was leader. He's a very effective communicator, and what he has done is efficiently and very quickly made it clear that there is an alternative. If you're unhappy with the mainstream parties, there is an alternative on the left of the political spectrum that exists for you, in the same way that Reform represent an alternative on the right of the political spectrum. Now, calling it left and right is perhaps overly simplistic, but that's a really good indicator of the sort of broad thing that he's been able to do. And if you look at, for instance, in Germany, at the last national elections there, there's a lot of attention paid to the fact that the alternative for Deutschland got a large number, proportionately, of votes among young men. But among young women, even greater numbers voted for Die Linke, the left-wing party. And so if the Greens can pull off a similar trick and bring over left-wingers, but particularly young women, then that could be a very effective electoral strategy, again, in specific constituencies.
Do you think Reform have peaked too early?
Well, we can speculate on this, but it is simply speculation, and anyone who tells you otherwise is probably trying to sell you a subscription to their Substack. I think it's perfectly possible that they could have peaked too early, but at the same time, a lot of this will depend not so much on Reform, but on Labour. And if Labour are unable to achieve the kind of things that Keir Starmer talks about in his speech, if they're unable to deliver the kind of change that people are looking for and that they have sold themselves on, and if they're unable to actually bring about a change in those perceptions that we talked about, then I can see people abandoning not just the Labour Party, but the mainstream parties in greater numbers. And perhaps that will go to reform and increase their position. Maybe it won't, but it will be a very interesting thing to watch. And as I say, nobody is really sure what will happen.
Can you remember a period in which people's political allegiances mapped quite so such a broad spread? It's not like it used to be, is it?
It's certainly not. The level of what geeks like me call political promiscuity, in other words, people switching their vote from one party to another, is far greater than it was in previous generations. Parents and grandparents of many listeners will perhaps only ever have voted for one party, on election after another after another. But those times are long gone for many people. And so the switching from one party to another is perfectly possible. But at the same time, in terms of parties outside the mainstream being popular, we have been here before. In the early 1980s, the Liberal Democrats, in their previous incarnation as the SDP, before they merged with the Liberals, the SDP achieved more than 50%, 50%, in some polls in the early 1980s. Now, the situation was very different then, and the SDP are certainly not reform. But it indicates just how high you can get in certain circumstances. What happened to the SDP? Well, 9 years after those high watermarks, they lost in a by-election to the monster-raving loony party. So a lot can change. But we have been in situations where there have been parties outside the mainstream that have done very well previously. But there is an enormous difference, historically speaking, between polling and election results. Turning poll numbers and a strong performance in the polls, even if it's week in, week out, turning that into actual votes in constituencies and turning those votes into wins and seats in Parliament, that is another challenge entirely.
Good to talk to you, Joe. Thanks very much for that. That's Joe Twyman, Director of Polling at the agency Delta Poll. So, what do you think? Is it fair to say that Keir Starmer has had the last year and a bit? Well, you know, once you get your knees under the desk, you've pretty much just got a year till now, laying the foundations of a blooming country to come. The work that is needed to be done, all that, those difficult decisions that he kept telling us over and over again, are about to bear fruit. Do you feel that? 0345 6060 973, LBC.
LBC.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools, and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Hello, this is Mummy Phone. We're on holiday with an amazing beach. She's asked me to record her voicemail because she said if anyone hears the way I pronounce Menorca, they'll agree how important it is that we spend time together, undisturbed.
Take your holiday seriously. British Airways Holidays. Atoll protected.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
So we're talking about Keir Starmer. He has said that this year is going to be significantly better than last year, that all those difficult decisions that he had to make are going to start to bear fruit. He said it will be the year that the government spending decisions, including on the NHS and in towns and cities, will be felt by the public. Now, it's fair to say that we haven't felt it so far. It also might be the case that he has and the Labour Party have done good things. They've just been somewhat shy about boasting about them. Is there anything to that? 0345 6060 973. Penzance. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Nick. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Happy New Year.
Thanks very much. Happy New Year.
That's all I called for, so thanks. Bye. Not really. all this stuff about opinion polls this far in is faintly ridiculous. And just to put some context around that, when Thatcher won in 1979, this far in, her polls were in the toilet and said she was going to get rinsed at the next election. And we all know what happened.
Yeah.
And then this far into the Boris Johnson 2019 election, said he was going to be in power for 10 years or more. And we all know what happened. And then when Theresa May went to the country, even a few months before the election, she did it because she thought she could massively increase the majority, and we all know what happened there. So it's really hard to take this noise seriously, and I think it's only amplified by the right-wing press because it's yet another stick with which to beat Labour.
Yes, well, they're going to do that regardless, aren't they?
Exactly.
There's almost no point in communicating, for the government to communicate with the right-wing press, because regardless of what they say or do, they seem determined to get Nigel Farage into number 10, and they are going to do anything they can, everything in their power to make that happen, regardless of what this Labour government does. But it is also fair to say that there's a little bit of panic around some people in the Labour Party at the moment because of these polls that you say aren't reliable.
Yeah, and I just wish that they would stop. You could make a very strong case for saying to the people on the right of this country, if it's possible to turn this, I was going to say a rude word, S ends in T and show, followed by show, if it's possible to turn this, what the Tories left them round, in 14 months, you'd have to say the Tories were pretty stupid for not doing themselves.
Well, they are. I mean, Kemi Badenoch is saying that, if only she could get into number 10, that she'd be doing this and she'd be doing that. And it seems a bit odd that they were in power for 14 years and they didn't do any of the above. So it's hard to take that seriously. But even so, the backbenchers are getting a bit nervy, and there's talk about replacing Keir Starmer. Do you think there's anybody that at this point could do, and it would have to be a significantly better job, wouldn't it? Could they do that?
I actually don't believe there's one iota of a chance of Starmer being replaced, and I think that all of the talk and chatter around him being replaced exists pretty much solely in the heads of Telegraph and Daily Mail writers, which then subsequently might panic backbenchers in marginal constituencies, but they need to get a spine and stick to the course. So, there's 3.5 years till the next election, and there's an awful lot of headwinds coming at Reform. I mean, they're a climate change denying party, and you only have to look out the window to see what a ridiculous policy that is.
Yeah.
But perhaps an even bigger one is that it's starting to look very likely that the Trump government is imploding and is going to implode in a very unpleasant way and will be done and dusted before our next general election. And Nigel Farage needs to be surgically detached from Donald Trump. And there's every chance that the British people will see what happens when you give your vote to people like that on the basis of immigration, and then how they use it against their own support.
Yes, he is very much twinned in the mind with Donald Trump and everything that's going on over there. They're even taking their sort of nomenclature, aren't they? They want their own Doge team, despite the fact that Doge in America has cost the jobs of hundreds of thousands of people, has cost an enormous amount of money, and has saved nothing.
Well, it's even better, stroke worse than that. Doge has been abandoned now in the US, and what's more, the sociopath who Nigel Farage was grovelling to, who was the head of that, describes him as too weak to lead a party, which puts him in a very difficult, genuflecting position, doesn't it?
Do you think, just finally, do you think that part of the problem with Keir Starmer is that he is not a natural showman, that his personality is not like that of Boris Johnson, for instance, and that he is somewhat shy about, I'd use the word boasting, but telling us about the successes that his party has had?
Yes, he's definitely a poor salesman. But would you have if you were on the Titanic, would you rather have a good salesman or a steersman at the wheel? And the other point is that the right-wing press had it in for Labour from the second that they won the election and were going to immediately blame them for everything that the Tories have done. And the only thing that Labour Party has got, is to stick to their guns and see what fruit that bears. And in 3.5 years, they say a week is a long time in politics. Well, what is 3.5 years? And in 3.5 years' time, if the NHS is rocking and rolling like it was under the last Labour government,
yeah,
and if inflation's under control and interest rates are good and wages are up, it will be a very brave Reform support who decides to upend that.
Very good to talk to you, Andrew. Thanks for that. 0345 6060 973. You can text 84850. Email nicka@lbc.co.uk. And if you're on WhatsApp, it's the same number as the phone. 0345 6060 973. More of your calls on this to come. We're going to take a short break for the news, after which we're going to hear more about those awful events at that Swiss resort. 10:30 on LBC, the news headlines with Matt Hewitt.
It's reported DNA and dental records are being used to identify the victims of the Swiss ski resort fire. At least 40 people are dead in the tragedy in Combe-Montana, with candles or fireworks suspected as the cause. New York City's new mayor, Zoran Mamdani's, told crowds his administration may not always succeed, but will never be accused of lacking the courage to try. The 34-year-old Democrat's been inaugurated as the first Muslim leader of America's biggest city. And a Labour MP's told LBC the high street will collapse without changes to what she called an excruciating rise in business rates. Rachel Maskell says she's pleading with the government to listen to backbenchers, but the Treasury has said it's offering clear support to help businesses. LBC weather. Snow showers will feed into northern Scotland overnight, and rain with some snow will move across Northern Ireland into Wales, central and some southern parts of England. Windy with a widespread frost and lows of -3 to 6 degrees.
This is LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
At Lidl, we value getting you the most out of your money. Like switching from Tesco to Lidl and saving £32 on this week's big shop. See the savings at lidl.co.uk/you save and start the new year feeling like a savvy saver. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 10th of the 12th, 25. Tesco also sell other products. See online for more details.
Hiya, Kenny the Hamster here, proud pet of Doug and Carol. Hey up, looks like my mum Carol's off out with the girls again. I tell you, since she took that quick NHS Healthy Choices quiz, she's drinking less, but going out more. And to think, she thought being healthy would mean being boring. You might want to give it a go yourself.
Go, girlfriend!
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a simple plan to follow.
Now, I'm as guilty as anyone when it comes to ignoring things. Rogue grey hairs, red flags in relationships, or that service reminder on your car dash. Luckily, that one's easy. Visit Cinch for fat-free servicing at over 100 locations. Any car, whether you bought it from Cinch or not. With MOTs, $39.95 and servicing from only $129.95. To book your service or buy your next car, visit cinch.co.uk. See cinch.co.uk/servicing for details. Terms and exclusions apply.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
More of your thoughts on the year to come and whether it will see the fortunes of Keir Starmer improve after a year or so of laying the groundwork for what may blossom this year. But first, let's talk about Crans-Montana, that terrible story coming out of Switzerland. Julia Hamilton is a correspondent for CGTN and was at the scene there earlier today, and she joins us on the line now. Hello, Julia.
Hi.
So what do we know so far?
Well, yes, so it's been quite an awful day in Kuantan-Tana. I was there all day speaking to some of the locals and watching the investigators arrive, police arrive. The center of the town was cordoned off by the police because, of course, the investigation is ongoing now. So the police have told us earlier that around 40 people are dead and approximately 115 people are injured, most of them seriously. But we don't quite know yet their nationalities or their ages or any other details. And, of course, this toll is not final either.
It was the kind of place, though, that young people would congregate in, isn't it?
That's right. Yes, this bar is actually known as a place for young people to hang out. And so some of the victims, some of the injured people, they were as young as 16. So yes, indeed, there was a very young crowd in that bar. And some of the missing people also appear to be young people.
There's been different reports about how it may have started. Some say that it was a customer who let off a firecracker of some sort, and others say that it was one of those where a waiter puts a sparkler in a drink and then it set fire to some decorations. Do we know the truth?
Well, that's right. There's been quite a few witness accounts of what might have happened there. Like, as you mentioned, some of their birthday candles and some flares. But the police have refused to confirm any of those witness accounts. So the police actually have said very little at this stage about the cause of the fire because, of course, they are conducting an investigation. So for the moment, we don't know the cause, at least the official cause of the fire.
But the cause of the injuries, am I right in thinking that it was a basement venue that only had one narrow staircase exit?
Yes, that's right. So the bar has been described as a place where there are two levels, one in the basement and the higher level. And yes, there was a narrow staircase. But of course, again, the investigators, they are there to establish and see if any of that could also be blamed.
It seems odd that a place like Switzerland would allow a venue to be laid out like that. It seems that it would not be allowed in this country, there being only one exit.
Yes, that's right. It's a very unusual incident for Switzerland because here the safety is taken very seriously generally. But yes, the police, they didn't confirm or didn't deny anything. They are trying to establish what's going on. And apparently there have been safety checks done at least once a year. So we'll have to wait and see until the end of the investigation to know actually if that was a part of the cause.
Good to talk to you, Julia. Thank you so much for that. That's Julia Hamilton, correspondent for CGTN, who was at the scene at Cairns, Montana earlier today. Now, going back to Keir Starmer, he said that he is feeling frustration by the slow pace of change, but it is perhaps unreasonable to expect anything quicker after taking over from a government that had seemed to have been keen on smashing the place up for 14 years straight with the austerity. And then, of course, there was COVID. The effects of Brexit are still being felt, particularly with immigration, of course, and the war in Ukraine. It seems to have all come at the same time, making Keir Starmer's job even more difficult than it would ordinarily have been. Do you cut him some slack on that regard? And do you feel, like he does, that actually the groundwork has been laid and that this year we're going to start to see the fruits being bared from that? East Grinstead, hello, Robert.
Hello there. Happy New Year to you, Nick.
Oh, happy New Year.
And good job. Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, I think Sir Keir, when he first came to power, he had my respect. It's a really difficult job to do, and for anyone who does that has, hats off to them. But I think the problem with Sir Keir is, he has been elected with the lowest turnout for over 100 years, and in a sense, that I feel that the decisions that he made in the past. When he talks about difficult decisions ahead, I think Sir Keir had some pretty easy decisions in the past that he completely made a mess of,
like
which
what?
Is partly his own fault. Well, I do think that, it was strange I was a Remain voter in 2016, happy to leave. You know, and it seems sensible. 2017, I think, was, to Sir Keir, was the election that never happened. It's a very strange event where I was happy to leave, and Theresa May had an EU-approved deal. Now, I didn't agree with everything that Theresa May had then, but it seemed like pretty normal. And it was a pretty no-brainer decision to just vote that through. But he didn't. He kept voting that vote down. Therefore, obviously, Boris Johnson got a huge landslide. That was inevitable, because people don't like their democracy being interfered with. You know, Remainers, Leavers alike. And then you had a strange event where, obviously, we had all the lockdowns in March 2020. But by 2020, David Cameron's mandate had finished. And in a sense, the difficult decision, and I'm partly to blame as well, was during the intermission in the lockdowns, effectively the public had a decision to make. Why are we putting up with Sir Keir and Boris, who are carrying on with weird stuff? You know, we'd come out of the EU, under Boris's deal, whatever that was. I don't think everyone had lost an interest by now. But, you know, during 2020, during the summer, during the weird intermission, my gym was doing social distancing, weird stuff. Keir Starmer was putting on a mask. I mean, I wasn't buying any of that. I was in the cinema watching Tenet and Those That Wish Me Dead. And I wanted business as normal. And Sir Keir's meddling ages ago on fairly simple decisions made my business harder. I was sending paintings to Germany, making money during that. Everything to do when leaving the EU became harder. And Sir Keir is part of the blame for that. You know,
I'm a little confused as to why or how you're blaming Keir Starmer for what the Conservative government did.
The Conservative government promised an electoral promise where a lot of parties always put in their manifesto a vote on the EU. The shock was David Cameron delivered on it, and it was a shock to him that he lost, so he resigned. But the thing is, the moment the British public made up their mind to leave, Sir Keir Starmer went against democracy. He effectively blocked it. And even when, you know, he was a real pro-EU person, he sort of thought the EU was like the Sandinistas or something.
How did he block it?
He voted EU-backed deals down. But took all the time between 2016 to 2019, when Theresa May left in tears, even after the electorate had voted Theresa May in power in 2017, Sir Keir just continued to undermine Theresa May's deals with the EU. He just meddled. And when he
meddling is expressing an opinion. You wouldn't expect the Labour leader to just go along with whatever the Tories were saying at the time.
Well, I know that. Look, now he got power last year, and, you know, I think he's going to be out fast. But just to looking at what he was saying around 2018, at the time, Sir Keir was saying, when he was leader, that I cannot support, in his own words, a blind deal with the EU.
Right.
Meaning he was insisting on detail. Sir Keir was
insisting
stepping into areas which do not concern him. That's to do with business.
That's just so ridiculous. I can't hear any more of it. Keir Starmer is to blame for what the Tories did with Brexit. That just doesn't make any sense at all. But thanks, Robert. Brendan says, really don't believe it when millionaires in Parliament are telling us that we're going to be better off. It's a lie. Is Keir Starmer a millionaire? Paul says, reform will be the next government for sure. This country has had enough of the woke... that's as far as I'm going to read. Anybody uses the word woke as an insult, as I've said many times before, the best policy is to just smile sweetly and back out of the room. Don't make any sudden moves. Maidenhead. Hello, Gary.
Yeah, evening to you, Nick. It's day one of 2026. Here we go, eh? But I think, mate, he was quite right about, like, Starmer. I don't think we've got any politician or any prime minister or anybody that is putting the British people first. And I mean, what if there is no way out for this country now? Like you say, with Brexit, what if things don't get better? They're only getting better for a certain few people. I mean, you know my circumstances.
I don't. How would I know your circumstances?
we've talked, you know, on the chap that's been living in the car for 3 years.
Oh, right.
And surely the best indicator that this country is getting back to, well, maybe the 70s or whatever, I don't know.
The 70s?
Well, in the 70s, you never had food banks. I mean, just before Christmas, I was at the food bank. It was rammed. I even got talking to a lady. I thought she was going to some sort of fancy dress, but she was a nurse.
Right, well, I don't think that the economy in the 1970s was something that we would want to return to. I think people dream wistfully of the 1970s because they were young then.
Yes, but you still could earn enough money, pay bills, and then have an holiday.
Right, OK, well, that is certainly true, yes. Yeah, a family of four could have one adult working. They could own their own house. They could have a car in the drive. Maybe two. They could have a couple of holidays a year, and the other adult, traditionally the woman, would be the stay-at-home mum taking care of the kids and the house and so on. And now, two adults need to be working, and they probably still wouldn't be able to afford the kind of lifestyle that we had then. That much is true, but it's probably to do with the fact that the wealth that's been created in the intervening period has not been spread around those that have made it. It's just gone straight to the top. The average CEO of a FTSE 100 company used to earn 40 times the average wage of the people in his company or her company. Now it's 200 times, 300 times. So that's where the money has gone, and that's why a lot of people feel that they're pedalling furiously in order to just stay still. But you can't blame Keir Starmer for that. And well, you could blame the Conservative Party, because they seem to prioritise those very people at the top. Labour, less so, certainly. So pick the least bad option, Gary. Thanks for that. 0345 6060 973.
I'm Tom Swarbrick. Thank you for your calls throughout the year on LBC.
Because our young girls approach these foreign guys. And
so it's up to the girls to not approach people who they think might be foreign. What is that girl meant to... don't laugh, you despicable man. Why are you blaming a 15-year-old girl? Living as a woman doesn't make you a woman.
I trust people to be an expert in their own gender. If someone has been living as a woman for 15 years...
What does that mean, living as a woman?
I don't really know how I can answer the question again.
It's not about timeline.
Because
it's
not about 90 calendar. Days, Mr. Corker. The president said 90 days.
Don't let me answer the question and don't interrupt me.
I'll choose when I speak. Please carry on.
Then this interview is terminated.
I'll be back next week. Taking your calls on LBC.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the art and design industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Keo, an art and design student in year 12.
As an art student, we get the chance to work on our own pieces, either in the studio or using the digital software. Some of my work has also been shown in galleries, and last week I got the chance to attend a design agency to learn more about my future career.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
So, you're geared up for this Making Tax Digital thing?
Sure, I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate, digital taxes.
Mm-hmm, it's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah, probably will need some 2x4s. I'm going to go take the van in for a new fan belt, squeaky.
Hey, Making Tax Digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD. Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
Hiya, Kenny the Hamster here, beloved pet of Doug and Carol Brookbank. Right, now, I got to hand it to Doug and Kazza. They're doing school pickups, jobs, trips to the supermarket, and still find time to get healthy. Apparently, it's down to some NHS Healthy Choices quiz. Only took them 5 minutes to do, then gave them a simple plan to get started.
Come on, kids.
Total amazeballs.
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices Quiz to get a score and a plan that's right for you.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
We are talking about Keir Starmer. He said he's frustrated by the slow pace of change, but insists that, you know, having laid the groundwork, that this year is going to be significantly better than the last was. This message says, Starmer and Reeves, also known as Laurel and Hardy, bumbling, clueless, making it up as they go along. Which is a meaningless thing to say. This says, Polanski might be needed to form a coalition with Labour against the Tories, but he won't consider it if Starmer is still leader. I'm not sure that's true either. Vivian says, this is your lovely Labour Party. People are not right-wing or racist, just fed up of being taken for fools. British working till they drop, and all these men getting free council houses and everything free. Surely you don't agree with what is happening in this country. Well, I don't agree that that is an accurate picture of what's happening in this country. Vivian, who gets free council houses and free everything else? The reason that there are so few council houses is because Margaret Thatcher sold them all with the notion that people who own their house would be more likely to vote Conservative. And then subsequent governments did not build council houses, so there is a lack of them. The problem is not the people below you on the ladder pulling you down, Vivian. It is the people above you on the ladder pushing you down. And I think that maybe part of the problem is that the electorate is pretty badly informed. Their opinions seem to be made for them by the press that they read and increasingly the social media that they read. Both of which are owned by tax-averse billionaires who don't have your best interests at heart. Llanelli in Wales. Hello, Sam.
Hi, yeah, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
It's a pleasure to be on, Nick. Yeah, like I say, I mean, whoever got into power at the last election and the next one, it will be just a poison chalice, really, in all honesty, in my opinion, because it's gone too far. You know, the aristocracy have taken over. They've got, you know, the rich have got everything, and they've got perfect control over the media, as you say, majority of the media anyway. And it's just, it's no matter what happens, we're in so much dire straits that, you know, there's no way, whatever you do, you can't do right for doing wrong, really. So much as the Labour Party might be trying to sort of lift us up a little bit, it's not going to happen. I really, and it pains me to say so, because I'm an avid Labour supporter, always have been, but it's just, it's sickening, really, to think that, you know, we've actually let it get this bad.
That's too depressing a thought to have, Sam.
Yes, it is. I mean, like I say, Keir Starmer, I thought Keir Starmer might be a breath of fresh air, but like I say, it's all election talk, isn't it, really? And no matter who got in, it would be the same. And I've got a great respect now for the new Green Party. But the thing is, to be honest with you, I wonder if they will be sort of swayed when they get in power by, you know, those above them, and it's the money's the pushing it, in all honesty.
Well, money is, it's one of the biggest issues in politics. You are more likely to act, as a politician, act in the interest of the people that are paying you. But if...
Well, of course, but what goes around comes around.
I don't know what that means, but the Conservative Party and Reform have a small number of very high... earning individuals, very wealthy individuals, who are paying their way, essentially. The Labour Party, on the other hand, have a large number of people who give them a small amount of money, and that would be the trades unions. Now, which... Okay, no party is perfect, but which do you think would be more likely to act in the interests of the larger number of people? I mean, if you're getting all your money from a small handful of billionaires, then you're probably more likely to act in the interests of billionaires. But if you're getting your money from a large number of people who give a small amount, then you'd be less less inclined, perhaps, or less beholden to the super rich. And the idea that that the only way is down, well, I just can't accept that at all. That's almost exactly what those who want to get Starmer out of number 10 would have you believe, that it is all hopeless, there's nothing we can do, but we do have all of the power. And I think that part of the problem is that Keir Starmer does seem to be reluctant to boast. Now, that may have changed just at the end of last year, because they put out a press release, which got almost zero publicity, of course, from the right-wing press. They're not interested in repeating the positives. But it did tell us the good things that they had done, which seemed to be a bit of a departure for the Labour Party, because it's almost as though that they were ashamed to tell us. They didn't want to boast. But they have achieved a certain amount, which a respectable amount, I'd say, in the first year. But it's been completely drowned out by the obsession of the media or with the farmers tax, for instance, which is a tax on millionaire landowners, or the VAT on private schools, which is an attack on the super rich, cementing in their position and holding on to the wealth down the generations. That's not in the interest of most of the people, but it seemed to be what most of the people were interested in. And I do think that there is, it's almost a determination on the part of those that own the both the media and the social media now, both of which are sort of equally important, I think, to draw the wool over your eyes and to tell you that it's an impossible situation and nothing can be done. And the only thing that would save the nation is if Nigel Farage was in number 10 and Donald Trump took over this country and ran it as a dictator. I mean, the amount of people that come out with that stuff is incredible. And they didn't think it off the top of their head. They read it. So, yeah, I think education is partly the problem. And with the advance of artificial intelligence, we don't appear to be getting smarter. Like, the opposite seems to be the case. Conil in Spain. Hello, Graham.
Hi, Nick. All the best for the new year.
Yes, happy new year.
Thank you. Yeah, I was listening earlier, and when the guy said Keir Starmer, as this is a criticism he made of him, was insisting on detail, I thought, my God, I just thought, wow, I've just gone back in time. I'm listening to Michael Gove, and I heard We've Had Enough of Experts. It was just sort of like out of the same box.
It was an odd call, because he kept saying Sir Keir Starmer, or Sir Keir. He said it way too many times, as though he was trying to plant the idea in our minds that he was somehow part of the aristocracy. It does sit rather poorly that the leader of the Labour Party is a sir, but never mind.
Just a quick thing. You asked the question, why is Reform doing so well and yet Nigel Farage is doing so badly? And for me, that's pretty much an easy one. I would say there's a lot of not very bright people in the country, but also Nigel Farage is not a very nice person. I mean, that just sort of would square that one up, I think.
Well, it is odd, though, that he polls worse than all of the major party leaders apart from Keir Starmer. I mean, he's significantly less popular than Zach Polanski, for instance, which is kind of odd. Maybe it's just because people have just been introduced to Zach Polanski and have only seen the upside. Ed Davey, though, we know quite well. He's the second most popular leader of a political party. Kemi Badenoch has had a terrific year. She's come from way down to be above Farage now, who's on a downward slope, and yet Reform are, at the moment, polling the highest.
I think it's... as far as Keir Starmer goes, I think we're heading towards a Brexit election, you know, because he's just got to stand back and go, this is what, you know, in another 2 years' time, with more damage done, you know, due to the, you know, the problems that there are with Brexit, he's just going to say, listen, this is what you've been given by these people, Reform and Conservative. Do you want to drop more of that? Or, you know, and I think people will go, no, listen, you know, it's okay. A U-turn. I mean, if I'm going the wrong way down a motorway, I'm going to make a U-turn.
No. Right, you pick the wrong road. Don't do a U-turn on the motorway, but I take the point.
Well, I'm going to turn around, basically. Yeah. I'm not going to keep going down the wrong road.
Right.
You know,
It does make sense, yes. People criticise people for U-turns, but our entire lives are made of U-turns. Exactly. I used to think vegetables were horrible when I was a child. Now, if I didn't U-turn, then I would probably be quite sick. Yes. All right. Good to talk to you, Graham. Thanks for that.
Cheers.
Plenty of more opportunities to talk about this, no doubt, on LBC in the future. But we're going to change it in the next hour. As thousands of Britons ditch alcohol this month, it does seem like the worst month of the year to do it, doesn't it? January. Why did they pick January? But anyway, doctors say that dry January, or a doctor more specifically, says that dry January has very little benefit on the body. Now, the presumption is that we give up booze for this month of January and then go straight back to how we used to drink, abusing the booze as normal. That's not very good for us, so says a particular medical expert. And according to him, a month is not long enough to detox the impacts of alcohol on your health. So is there any point in dry January if you're not going to continue that on for the rest of the year? Have you tried dry January in the past? And did it actually make a difference to your drinking habits during the rest of the year? Are you thinking of trying dry January for the very first time this year? And if so, why have you made that decision? Is dry January more about the impact on your mental health than your physical health? Are you taking part this year? And if so, why? And if you've done it before, how did it go? 0345 6060 973 LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock. King Charles says he's heartbroken after a fire killed around 40 people at an alpine ski bar. 115 people celebrating New Year's at Combe Montana in Switzerland are hurt, many with serious burns. Times reporter David Chazan says an investigation is underway.
Pictures taken inside the basement before the fire show what appears to be some kind of soundproofing foam on the ceiling. So questions are going to be asked about whether the proper fire retardant materials were used there and also whether the place was overcrowded.
The new mayor of New York City, Zoran Mamdani, says the city's achievements will reach across its five boroughs and far beyond.
The movement we began over a year ago did not end with our election. It lives on with every battle we will fight together. Every blizzard and flood we withstand together. Every moment of fiscal challenge we overcome with ambition, not austerity, together. Every way we pursue change in working people's interests, rather than at their expense, together.
The Democratic Socialist addressed crowds at an inauguration ceremony at City Hall. A Labour MP has warned the high street will collapse without substantial changes to business rates. Many firms' rateable value will rise from April. Rachel Maskell says the increases are in many cases excruciating and a reform of the system is needed.
The business community have got many, many ideas of how that can be done in a fair and proportionate way, but certainly not one that puts such demands on businesses that traders are saying that their doors will not be able to sustain this increase.
The Treasury has said it's offering clear support to help businesses recover and grow. A man has been charged with breaking into the grounds of Kensington Palace twice in the days before Christmas. Derek Egan is accused of trespassing on a protected site. The 39-year-old from Hillingdon has also been charged with breaching his bail conditions. And as cold air from Lapland pushes into the UK, forecasters have upgraded snow warnings over northern Scotland from yellow to amber. Yellow Met Office warnings of snow and ice come into force for Northern Ireland and much of England and Wales in an hour. There are also cold health alerts in place for all of England. LBC weather. Snow showers will feed into northern Scotland overnight and rain with some snow will move across Northern Ireland into Wales, central and some southern parts of England. Windy with a widespread frost, lows of -3. Heavy snow in northern Scotland tomorrow. Sunny elsewhere, highs of -2 to 6 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Dry January. It's the yearly initiative spearheaded by Alcohol Change UK. And the aim is for us to give up drinking alcohol for a whole month in the hope of boosting our health and perhaps changing our habits and our relationship with alcohol. Matthew Talbot is a political commentator and ambassador for Alcohol Change UK and is on the line now. Hello, Matthew.
Hi, Nick.
Is there any point in going teetotal in January if you just pick up where you left off in February?
I think the health benefits to that
will vary. I think the difference between doing a DIY sort of type event of a dry January compared with using, you know, resources that groups like Alcohol Change UK offer, such as the Try Dry app, will double your chances. And what you'll find is people that use resources like this go on to drink less in February, March, whatever else it might be. I think it's around 70% of people drink less following that. So I think you may pick up, you may not pick up in the same way, and may actually interrupt potentially harmful habits that you might not realise you had.
What is the Try Dry app?
So that is the app launched by Alcohol Change UK specifically for Dry January. It offers tools and resources to help you along with Dry January for those that may or may not struggle. Offers targets and sort of things that you can do and challenges and whatnot to help you along the way, essentially, and just sort of be a bit more mindful about the units that you might be consuming.
Now, you say that 70%, was that the figure that you said that changed their behaviour after using that app? Can that be relied on, or are people just saying what they think you want to hear?
I don't know. I suppose you have to take people at face value. And I know that, you know, the British public might not always tell you the absolute truth, but that's certainly the figures that Alcohol Change UK have found, certainly.
So what effect, then, on the body, does abstinence for a whole month have?
Well, this is the interesting thing. I read the article from the health professional you cited, and I just seemed a bit confused by it. I think the idea of a detox, he's probably right. You know, it may not be long enough for your body to flush things out. But you'll see from many health professionals that after about a week, you'll tend to have more energy, better concentration, better sleep quality. Once you get to about 2 weeks, you'll have clearer thinking, better hydration. 3 weeks, depending on how much you do drink, will have an impact on your weight because you'll be consuming fewer calories than what you normally do with alcohol, and a more positive impact on your memory. And after 4 weeks, the interesting thing is your risk of developing certain cancers, including two of the most common, breast and colorectal, begins to start to diminish. And that, you know, this isn't just me speaking or Alcohol Change UK. This is, you know, reports from The Lancet in 2018 and other respected journals. So I think you do feel the benefit. I know some people go, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this. This is like the worst thing I've ever done. But it's interesting the amount of people that see it in a different light.
But it's a kind of like a crash diet, isn't it? Crash diets aren't known for their health benefits. In fact, medical professionals warn people against it. Is the same kind of warning to be attached to a crash alcohol avoidance?
I don't know. I suppose I don't know the deep enough science between just doing it and starting, truth be told. I gave up drinking. I'm not anti-alcohol. I'm anti-alcohol for me because I had a problem with it. I had a very troubled relationship with drinking, and I'm much better for not doing that. I think the idea is you do something for a little bit. I suppose if you were to start a crash diet, you might continue it because you go, actually, I feel better for this. If you're waking up less lethargic in the morning, especially if you've had an heavy weekend and you're going, I don't feel anxious because I can remember what I did on the night out or when I stayed in. So I suppose the idea is continuing in those good habits rather than just going, I'm going to put myself through this because I think it's probably a good thing, and then I'm going to carry on the same. And again, I think if you were to do that as a DIY thing, you might well do that. I think the more is you learn as you go on through things like the Try Dry app, you may actually pick up some better habits, if you will.
The doctor that you were referring to is a Dr. Alastair Scott from Self, S-E-L-P-H, which is a private healthcare service provider. And one of the things that I believe he was saying was that rather than a crash diet in the month of January, it might be better throughout the year to have alcohol-free days every week. Is that something that Alcohol Change UK would agree with?
I think a cutting in the units people have, especially if it's over the recommended 14 units a week, well, yeah, that would obviously be beneficial. I think the problem we're seeing at the moment is that certainly since COVID, alcohol-related deaths have gone through the roof, and people, because of lockdowns and other things, developed habits of drinking at home, obviously, I think we're seeing more people drink at home as well because of the sheer cost of going out for a pint. You'll do well to find a pint for under £10 in central London a lot of the time. And I think it's just about making people aware of the real serious risk. I think lots of people are aware of the effect that alcohol can have on your liver and other things. We don't talk about cancer enough. Alcohol is just as bad for things like cancer as smoking, and yet there's such an emphasis on smoking that we've done very well with when it comes to public health and awareness, and we're not quite there, I don't think, with alcohol.
Yeah, you mentioned that 14 gram of alcohol a week. That's about a beer a day. But who drinks one beer a day?
Yeah, I don't know, you'd be surprised. When I used to work in politics, I think people would drink more than one beer a day at times, but you will have people that will go, I just need a little release at the end of the day. I'm going to stay for one because I've got to get home. The missus will have me guts for garters if I'm not getting home for the dinner or picking up the kids. And you'd be surprised, actually, how many people may well do that after work. Particularly, I noticed in London compared to other cities, when I lived in Manchester, didn't have the same culture about it that London does. And maybe that's because people live out towards the suburbs and commuting or whatever else it might be. But you'd be surprised. I think you would be surprised the amount that do.
And this 14 grams of alcohol, that's the suggestion, that's the maximum that is currently suggested. And that maximum has sort of fluctuated. And there are big differences in recommended alcohol limits between different countries. So it presents a rather confusing picture to the consumer, doesn't it?
I think, you know, as I said, look, I'm not anti-alcohol, but obviously drinking no alcohol compared to some alcohol would be better for you than drinking some alcohol. And I think there's other little things. I've seen articles creeping in this Christmas about, you know, we should be wary about tackling things like people being over the limit and whether that should be reduced somewhat. I just think, as someone that would like to know what he was doing, I wouldn't drink at all if I was getting in the car, because it's just not worth it. And people, I think the reason it also fluctuates is it depends person to person as well. People that might be, for instance, smaller, it will have an effect depending on what you drink than somebody like myself who's over 6'4". People have different tolerances. So I think there's like an average, really, of where the public health comes in from the government and other people. And I think that will differ potentially on how big or small or heavy or whatever people are worldwide.
You know, we used to be told that alcohol is good for you. I mean, red wine particularly. And I can remember, you know, medical professionals and chemists and scientists and so on saying that, you know, a little sip every now and again is actually beneficial to their health. But now we're told that no alcohol at all is best. That seems confusing as well.
Yeah, and I think you'll find a lot of Irish mothers from a certain generation would be prescribed Guinness because of the huge iron content in Guinness. And what effect that had, I don't know. But as I said, I miss having a pint, Nick. I loved having a pint. I'm all about atmosphere. I love going to the football and being involved. But it had the detrimental effect on me that I hated and didn't want to do anymore. I think people are free to do what they want. I just think we should be doing more as a society to really know about the harm that it has on you. And I don't want to be like the fun police. Listen, we're all going to die. Lots of things are bad for us. It's all going to affect us at some point. But I think as a society, we owe it to ourselves that the human cost and the economic cost of lives being lost that could potentially be saved from alcohol harm-related deaths is one that we should be investing in a lot more.
Is it possible that all of these guides about what we should take are based on flawed information? Because it's all about what patients say they drink, isn't it? They present with drink-related problems to a GP, and then the GP says, well, how much do you drink? And they'll say, well, I just have a small sherry at Christmas. And so the guidance is then based on the effects of a small sherry at Christmas and bears no relation to what they actually do drink.
I think there's a possibility, absolutely. And as you'll know, listen, I'm a believer in science, but science changes over time the more that we learn, and based on what you know, scientists do and experiment on and research and whatever else. I think there's obviously aspects of alcohol that are bad. We know this. That doesn't mean that people don't like going out getting a bit drunk, because it feels nice and it's funny and we all have a laugh. But, you know, again, I sound like the fun police and we're only a day into the new year. But I know for myself the aspect of the mental aspect, the financial aspect as well, because the 14 units a week, I think if you're going to price that at London prices, about £300 a month. It's a hell of a cost for somebody just having one pint a day. You add that up and up, that has a detrimental effect on your mental health. And then you get to the physical aspect as well, which you know, we all know about a little bit more.
Yeah, I believe that Dry January started in 2013, didn't it?
Yeah,
and 4,000 participants signed up there. Last year, about 200,000 people officially participated and millions attempted it unofficially. Yet, alcohol-specific deaths in that time went up from about 7,000 to over 10,000. Doesn't that suggest that giving up actually doesn't give you health benefits?
No, I think what you find is there is a cohort, particularly I think the age group between 50 and 65, make up the bulk of alcohol-related deaths, and a lot of that has stemmed from the pandemic and I think habits that were picked up. I think if you look across to areas like Scotland where they've done good things on minimum unit pricing, deaths have gone down. I also worry about the fact from an addiction point of view that there is a memorandum of exclusion in the Equality Act which says alcohol addiction is a choice, which I don't think it is. I believe myself it's an illness, and you're going to be less likely to come forward to somebody at your workplace to say you have a problem with drink if you're not protected by the law in the fact that you might have to go off on a period of rehabilitation. It's still frowned upon, it's still quite taboo, and this is why we have to get better at this sort of stuff. The government are doing good things with regards to health labels. I think they could go further still.
And so, do you have a sense of how many people are going to be taking part this year?
I'm hopeful. I don't know off the top of my head. I'm hopeful it'll be more than last year. And I think there seems to be a generational shift in whether it be wellness or younger people just... I don't know. Part of me wonders whether they can afford it half the time, truth be told, with the cost of living. And whether there's a desire to go to pubs, however many of them are left with the rate that they're closing. But I'm hopeful it'll be more than last year, and we'll continue to see a trend that people will continue to carry on after January.
Thanks a lot, Matthew.
Thank you, Nick.
That's Matthew Torbett, political commentator and ambassador for Alcohol Change UK, which is the body behind Dry January. I should have asked him why they picked January. It seems like the worst month to me. It's cold and miserable and wet and you don't want to go outside and you pull down the Christmas decorations and you just got this blank wall in your living room and it all just seems so miserable. It seems to me like the worst month to give up booze, but that's the month they've chosen, Dry January. I suppose it's the opposite of what a lot of people were subjecting themselves to during the Christmas period. So have you tried this? Because it started out quite small, like I said, about 4,000 people in 2013. Now it's getting on for, millions, really. Millions who participate unofficially and 200,000 signed up for this Dry January movement, experiment, whatever you would like to call it. And they tried that Try Dry app. And if you have tried it, how did it go? Did it actually change your relationship with alcohol? And if you are thinking of doing it this year, then why have you made that decision? 0345 6060 973 LBC.
This is LBC.
Ready for that dream trip? From London Gatwick, fly Singapore Airlines to Singapore and seamlessly connect with a choice of 9 destinations across Australia and New Zealand. With daily flights and award-winning service, your next adventure starts here. Fares to Australia starting from £873. Book your adventure today at singaporeair.com. Offer ends 26th of January. Terms and conditions apply.
On day 3 of leftovers for lunch, have a day off. Switch it up with a double cheeseburger for £2.49 on the McDonald's Saver menu.
Leftovers left the chat.
Talk about saver satisfaction. Served from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Fees apply to delivery orders. Subject to availability.
Find me somebody to love.
The dream sale ends Tuesday.
Don't miss up to 40% off. Dreams. Love your bed.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
We're talking about Dry January. It's the yearly initiative spearheaded by Alcohol Change UK. Its aim is for you to ditch the booze for a whole month in the hope of boosting your health. And I wonder if you have done that, whether it did or not. Did you feel better afterwards? And did you slide straight back into what you, into the sort of relationship that you had with alcohol before? Or did it change the way you lived your life? Stevenage. Hello, Michael.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. Probably an unpopular opinion, but I think scrap it. Scrap Dry January in total.
Why is that?
I had a pub for 5 years. I sold it 2 years ago. I can honestly say that January in any pub or restaurant is the worst month of them all. It's the quietest. For obvious reasons, you know, people go out in December, spend a lot of money and maybe drink themselves senseless. I think maybe a different kind of message is probably more appropriate, you know, like drink in moderation throughout the year, not just 1 month of it.
Yeah, medics say that no alcohol at all is best. And I wonder if people hear that and they think, oh, well, you know what, I'm just not going to pay attention to any of the advice at all because I'm not going to go completely teetotal.
Well, I mean, the medics' advice kind of aligns with the government's, what they're putting in place, you know. It aligns quite well with, you know, if the medics are saying don't drink and the government are putting business rates up and all the bills are going through the roof, we might as well kind of shut the pubs anyway, because that's what's happening. You know, you're losing more and more pubs by the day, and you have all of those to contend with, you know, business rates, etc., etc. And then you're also kicked in the teeth by don't go to a pub on a month in January.
It does seem the cruelest month of all.
It very much is.
Yeah, I hadn't actually considered that restaurants and pubs are they do suffer their worst month in January because people just haven't got any money after the Christmas and the credit card bill comes in at the end of January, and that's always quite fearful.
Yeah, of course. And like I say, I think just the general approach should be more a case of just drink in moderation, if you're going to at all. I owned a pub for 5 years, I don't drink. But if you're going to drink, just be mindful of what you're drinking and how much of it you're drinking. You know, if you've got a problem, then that's a bit different. You kind of need to approach that problem and you know, look at it from a different kind of perspective. But generally, no, I would say, and I believe every single publican would say the same thing, you know.
Not every single publican is a teetotaler, though. When I worked in a pub for many years, I drank probably less than I have in my whole life, just because I was surrounded by it. And every night you could see what it was doing to people, and it kind of just put me off.
Well, it's funny you say that. It's exactly the same. When I had my pub, I used to drink. It kind of, towards the end, that's where I kind of looked at it and thought, you know what, every night you're sitting there sometimes on party nights, for example, and you're seeing how people are when they're completely bladdered, and you're like, oh, I really don't want to be that person.
Yeah. Did you notice
aside
that...
Aside from the fact I can't handle it.
Right. Did you notice that the age of the people changed over the 5 years that you had your pub? Because there's a lot of evidence to suggest that younger people just aren't as interested in drinking as their older relatives.
No, I'll be brutally honest. In my pub, and it wasn't a town centre pub, it was a food-led pub, but we did do a lot of events and music and stuff. We had a wide variety of customers, young and old. What I actually found myself was the younger generations drunk a hell of a lot more and spent a hell of a lot more. It was kind of, you know, like they would be ordering shots and stuff like that and have no problem paying for 5 Jaeger bombs or whatever else. But the older generation might actually just go out for a meal and have a couple of glasses of wine with dinner, you know?
Right.
It was very, very mixed. I certainly wouldn't say in that 5 years anything changed from who's kind of drinking more or... but then I do think that some people... you find the people with... You can tell. I mean, I know you shouldn't judge a book by its cover and all of that, but you can tell those that aren't struggling financially and those that are. And what I found was those that are struggling financially tend to spend the most money on alcohol.
Yeah. It was quite bizarre.
In order to mitigate the effects of not having any money, they just...
drown the sorrow.
Yeah, check out for the evening.
Yeah, but yeah, generally I think, you know, health is important, obviously. It's more important than alcohol. But equally, we do all need to support our local. You know, it's really important. And if you are doing Dry January for whatever reason, health reason, that's fine. But it doesn't stop you going to a pub and having a glass of Coke with a burger.
So why did your pub close then? Because there has been written lately about the demise of the pub and thousands are closing every year. But that's been the case for decades now.
Yeah, of course. But it is getting a lot worse. You know, you're peddling a lot harder to make the same amount of money. It's not impossible to make money out of the pub. Absolutely not, if you do it right. The reason I sold mine was right time, right price.
Right.
You know, it was just after COVID. We actually did really well in COVID. We adapted to deliveries, etc. And even coming out of COVID, we did really well. But it was, you know, it was just a write-off, a right time. I could see how things were going, you know, with the bills were getting higher. The income was kind of staying the same. So although you're not technically on a decline, eventually it's going to be like that. So it was kind of like, let's get out of there.
Right. All right, good to talk to you, Michael. Thanks for that.
Brilliant.
0345 6060 973. We're talking about Dry January. It's this yearly initiative spearheaded by Alcohol Change UK. It started quite small and it has become much more popular. Supposedly millions of people now, although they aren't actually signing up for Dry January, but they're trying it. You know, the publicity around it is making them think about their relationship with booze. And I wonder if you have done that yourself, and if you've gone through the month, did it actually change the way you drank, or did you just suffer through those 4 weeks and then go straight back to how you were before? 0345 6060 973. Oldbury, hello Ranjit.
Hi Nick, happy new year.
Yeah,
to
happy
you.
New year.
Yeah, how you doing?
Yes, good, thanks.
Yeah. You know, it's all about discipline, Nick, about alcohol, yeah? You know, your publican that you've just had on,
yeah?
It's a way of the times that, you know, we can't stipulate how trade's going to go, you know, over the last so many years, right? There's been so many things about pub shutting down. The next one on the line is obviously chip shops, which I own one, and we all are struggling. It's just the cost of living. Right, but the one thing I would say to anybody that runs a pub, yeah, don't open 24/7.
24/7?
Concentrate on, well, you know what I mean, all about 12 hours a day, yeah?
Mm.
Concentrate where your customers are going to come in, yeah? Because one of the stores started opening 24/7, like a retailer, and when the accountant said, listen, shut it down. We're not going to do 24/7. We're going to do 8 hours a day, and we'll concentrate. Then you cut down on your expenses, like staff wages, electricity, yeah, and all that kind of thing, yeah? Okay, so that's what you need to do. So like, I open from 11:45 a.m. till 2 o'clock in the afternoon, shut down for a couple of hours, reopen 4:30, shut at 10 o'clock, and I don't open on Sundays.
Ranjit, you're practically French.
Well, I'm of Indian origin, and maybe one of my grandparents was Eurasian.
No, I mean the opening hours that you just described are quite continental. They seem to have a different relationship with money than we do, and they prioritise their lifestyle more. That's what you kind of just described. Yeah. You close for lunch.
Close for lunch, yeah, you know, and running a chippy that's not in a town centre. We haven't got the footfall. Who's going to come around? Nobody. Going about the booze, yeah, on this Dry January, that's what you're talking about now.
Yeah.
A lot of Hindus and Sikhs, yeah, they have certain religious days, right? Like Sunday, they won't eat meat, they won't drink, yeah. Some of them on a Thursday won't eat meat or drink, and a Tuesday. So they balance it out throughout the year, right? With me, even though I am religious, I have a drink every night, but I control what I'm having. I'll have one can of lager mixed with lemonade as a shandy, and I'll have a large shot of whiskey 6 days a week. But on a Sunday, I will binge drink, which is probably not good for me anyway. Okay.
I think what you just described will raise eyebrows in the medical community. But I don't think it really matters how much you tell your doctor how much you drink. They're always going to tell you, oh, they're going to suck their teeth and say, well, that's just far too much. And I think that's one of the reasons.
I've got a good GP.
I think that's one of the reasons that people. I think that's one of the reasons that people tend to ignore medical advice is because they tell you that what appears to you to be reasonable isn't.
Nick, I've got a really good GP, right? Okay. I go in, he goes, Ranjit, I'm diabetic like you are. I'm overweight like you are. And I love a drink like you are. But my advice to you is, can you stop it? Okay? And I've seen him at a few parties, right, where he gets carried out, but I've never been carried out, so which one of us is better?
Well, the medical profession does have a reputation of being heavy boozers. They do. I mean, probably because of what they do for a living. I mean, if you were a GP and every day you had a queue full of sick people at your door, you might want a drink in the evening too. Ranjit, appreciate that. Thank you. 0345 6060 973. Have you ever done Dry January? Are you planning to do it now? If you've done it, how did it work out? Did it perhaps make you think, I'm going to continue this throughout the year and give up entirely? Why not people who don't drink at all? It's a bit weird going out with them, because if you're drinking and they're not, it's almost as though you think that perhaps you need to, I mean, I'm not saying that I get drunk, but just, keep it together a bit more than if you were all drinking at the same, at the same rate. A lot cheaper, though. Go to the supermarket and you add alcohol to the bill, and it goes right up. Doubles, probably. So, your thoughts on Dry January, 0345 6060 973. Going to take a short break for the news, and then we're going to get a brief update on that car crash in Nigeria involving the boxer Anthony Joshua and two other passengers who sadly died. First, the news headlines with Matt Hewitt.
The King says he's greatly saddened by a fire at a Swiss ski resort where around 40 people have died, calling it a nightmarish tragedy. About 115 others are in hospital with significant injuries after the blaze at Crans Montana. Zoran Mamdani has been giving his first address as mayor of New York City. The Democratic Socialist told crowds covered with blue confetti in Lower Manhattan that he stands alongside New Yorkers watching from construction sites, cramped kitchens and neglected libraries. And a man has been charged with breaking into the grounds of Kensington Palace twice in the days before Christmas. The 39-year-old is accused of trespassing on a protected site. LBC weather. Snow showers will feed into northern Scotland overnight, and rain with some snow will move across Northern Ireland into Wales, central and some southern parts of England. Windy with a widespread frost, lows of -3. Heavy snow in northern Scotland tomorrow, sunny elsewhere, and highs of -2 to 6 degrees.
This is LBC.
Did you know Vets for Pets are
the nation's most trusted vets?
We think that's because they're
locally owned
and locally loved.
Wherever you are,
we've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets. Based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
Find me somebody to love.
The Dream Sale ends Tuesday. Don't miss up to 40% off. Dreams. Love your bed.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. New year, new plans, new deals. With up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling.
Don't let missing teeth stop you smiling.
Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Well, as you probably know, the boxer Anthony Joshua was in a very serious accident in Lagos. Let's get the latest from Martin Domin. He is editor at All Out Fighting and a boxing writer at the Daily Mirror, and he joins us on the line now. Hello, Martin.
Hi, good evening.
So what do we know, what is the latest then about this crash?
The latest is that Anthony Joshua is recovering at home in Nigeria, having been released from hospital on New Year's Eve. There's no particular details about the injuries he suffered, but they are believed to be minor, and we haven't heard from him directly yet, and we just wait to do that, really.
And there were two other people in the car, though, weren't there? There was the coach and the personal trainer, and they died, didn't they?
They did, yes. Two of his friends and members of his team, Sina Gami and Latif Ayodele, sadly passed away in the accident. They were on the opposite side of the car to Anthony Joshua and the driver when it collided with the truck.
So none of the three were driving, is that right?
That's correct. There was the driver was the fourth member. He also sustained minor injuries, but has been released from hospital, but has also been questioned by police.
And do we know how the crash happened?
I believe they were overtaking another car and then collided with a stationary truck on the road. As I said, the driver of Anthony Joshua's car has been questioned, and there is a suggestion he could be charged for reckless driving. And the driver of the truck he fled the scene, and I believe, as of just now, has not been located.
So is the inference from that, then, that the driver of the truck was in the wrong in some way?
Yes, I believe so.
But how? I mean, if it was it parked badly? Is that what the problem was?
Well, I certainly believe that it was on a highway, on a motorway, one of Nigeria's worst. So I can only assume he shouldn't have been parked where he was.
And why was Anthony Joshua in Nigeria?
His family are from Nigeria. Both his parents are from Nigeria. He had, 2 weeks ago now, fought Jake Paul in Miami, returned to London, and then for Christmas, and then I believe after that flew to Nigeria to basically have a holiday, and was with some of members of his team, visiting family. That was his plan before returning back to the UK.
Yes, that Jake Paul fight was quite controversial, wasn't it? What was your take on that?
It was controversial. A lot of people believed it shouldn't have happened. My take was that Anthony Joshua was offered a lot of money for what was an easy fight. It maybe perhaps went longer than many expected, but I understood completely why he took the fight. There never should have been an expectation that it would have been an excellent sporting spectacle. It was an event, and I think as long as you accept it was an event, then it was largely harmless.
And as far as we know, the injuries that Anthony Joshua sustained are not career-ending, is that right?
We don't believe so. Physically, at least, there were minor injuries, so I guess the assumption at the moment is that physically he could return. The question we won't know the answer to for a long time, I don't expect, is whether psychologically, mentally, he would want to return, whether that's something he feels up to.
And what would have been next for Anthony Joshua?
He could have been out fighting as soon as Valentine's Day in Saudi Arabia. That was the plan. And then the big plan for 2026 was to fight Tyson Fury in London in September. But, I mean, certainly he won't be fighting in February now, and that Tyson Fury fight could now also be in doubt.
Very good to talk to you, Martin. Thanks for that. Martin Domin, no editor at All Out Fighting and the boxing writer at the Daily Mirror. Now, we were talking about Dry January. It's the yearly initiative spearheaded by Alcohol Change UK. Ditch the booze for a month. You will feel better, so they say. You'll probably feel better off financially. and it might change your relationship with alcohol. And I wonder if you have tried it before and what the effects were for you, and whether you're thinking of giving it a go this year, and if so, why? 0345 6060 973. Manchester, hello, Raj.
Hi there, Nick. How are you this evening? Are you
very well? Well, thanks.
Great, glad to hear it, mate. Glad to hear it. So, you know how we always our ring and we speak and we have a bit of a laugh and a joke, but this is a bit more serious than that. So, basically, back in when it was COVID 2020, I basically was just went downhill and I ended up being essentially an alcoholic, really. And I ended up in rehab in October 2020. And I've basically been sober ever since, which was like a 28-day residential thing it was, basically, up in the Northwest. So basically, you know, since then, I was going to say, I feel so much more clearer, but the clarity is all there. I feel absolutely perfect. I've not had a drink since then, basically. So just over 5 years now, I've been, you know, basically sober. And, you know, like I said, I was saying to you, the girl I spoke to before, the lady before, how clear of mind I feel and how much less stressed I feel and how much less brain power I use. Basically, I used to use so much more brain power thinking, how am I going to sneak alcohol into the house? And that's how serious it was. I know it's a laughing thing, because it is a laughing thing, but I used to think, how am I going to sneak some alcohol into the house today? And it used to use up so much brain power that it was just untrue. But now, the clarity is there. You know, I can feel myself being so much more reactive and so much more quicker and so much more...
Yeah.
Confident and everything that comes with it. I'm not saying it's for everyone, and you know, being completely sober is quite difficult at times, especially when you've got friends who want to go out and do this, that, and the other, as you were sort of suggesting before. I mean, it's a very, very, very big thing in like Sikh culture, Indian culture, which I think, you know, Ranjit, I think he's probably a Sikh as well, actually, as it happens. But you know, they seem to drink a lot. I'm a Sikh as well, so it seems to be part of your culture, really, to be drinking all the time.
Well, it's part of our culture, isn't it? Britons are known for our consumption of booze, standing up at the bar, sinking pint after pint after pint.
Exactly. And especially when you have like an event, a wedding, a party or something, whatever, they always seem to go over. So there's free alcohol put on the tables when it is a Sikh sort of event, and it just goes way over the top. And it doesn't need to be, but I think the soul... It's such a big thing in terms of alcoholism,
yeah.
If you like, in our culture, in Sikh culture especially.
They say that the sort of route through it, the first step is to admit that you have a problem. How did you come to the conclusion that you've got a problem?
I didn't. Basically, what happened was, I think it was a Tuesday or Wednesday, a van turned up at 8 o'clock in the morning and just took me away. I didn't think I had a problem. Seriously, they used to say, oh, we're going to take your money off, you take your debit cards, all this sort of stuff. And I used to say, no, you're not taking my stuff off, you know, like that sort of stuff. And then, literally, a van came in one morning and just took me away.
So, was that an intervention from your friends or family?
Yeah, from my family, exactly right. So, it cost me £15,000, it did.
Wow.
That's how much it cost, yeah. But I've obviously I paid that over, you know, hundreds of times over by how much alcohol I used to drink. But so, you know, it was worth it in that respect. But you know, and it was a beautiful place where I ended up. It was really nice. So you know, I can't complain in that way, and it worked. So you know,
but how difficult was it then to go alcohol free? I mean, were you sort of what? Did you go cold turkey?
So basically, there's this thing called Librium, and it's like it has to be administered to you. And they start off giving it with a higher dose, like, I don't know, whatever, let's say 10 pills a day, and then reduce it over like a 2 week sort of period. And that Librium is what stops you from having the shakes and having the desperation or the requirement or the need for alcohol. And once you get past that, as in the craving for alcohol, then it's all in your mind, isn't it? Why are you drinking? So, you know, you need to get to the point of why am I an alcoholic? What is the sort of the driver for it?
Mm.
And once you get that sorted, then it's like, I'm not saying it's easy, but it was, I honestly found it, I did find it easy. Once the cravings had gone, it was fine. I don't have any desire to drink again. I just don't want to, you know, I've got alcohol, there's alcohol all over the place, you know, but I don't have any desire to go buy any alcohol or drink any alcohol. It's just easy.
Because, you know, a lot of people would associate alcohol with certain social situations. You know, you go out with your mates, or you go to the football, or you know, you just go for a meal and you want to buy, and people buy a bottle of wine and so on, and you've never felt, ooh, yeah, I'd really quite like to give that a go.
So when I've been to like a wedding or an event or something, or out with my friends or something, what I tend to do is I'll meet them there, because I'm driving, so I'll meet them there, and then I'll stay there with them for a little while and have a bit of a laugh and a joke, and then I'll leave. And I'll come back in about an hour or half an hour. Even if I'm just sitting in the car for doing nothing, I just find that easier than watching them drink and get merry and start talking nonsense, as most people like that will do.
Yeah.
My friend certainly will do. And then I'll come back and then I'll just leave earlier. I mean, at least I've sort of shown my face and I've done my bit, if you like. But that's a bit that I find a bit more difficult. The fact that I'm watching my friends, my best friends getting drunk and talking nonsense, and I used to obviously talk nonsense like they did. And now I'm thinking these guys are idiots.
Do you ever try that low alcohol drink?
No. I just don't see any point, to be honest. I mean, I used to drink vodka and I could drink a lot of it, basically, but I just think, well, what's the point of drinking non-alcoholic vodka? I'm just saying, well, what's the point of drinking non-alcoholic beer? Well, I never used to drink beer anyway, but...
I understand beer more than spirits. I mean, there are those drinks now which seem to be as expensive as spirits that are sort of a low alcohol substitute. I get the beer thing because, you know, if you're out with your friends, there's only so much orange juice or water you can drink. The beer has a sort of drying effect on your palate, doesn't it? And you just want to sip more of it.
Absolutely. But I mean, I never drank beer anyway, not really drank beer, so I'd just have an orange juice. And like you just said, how many orange juices can you drink? And have one or max two, and then say, all right, I'll come back in a bit.
Right.
And I'd just go and then come back, and it's fine. You just have to find your own way to get through it, really. And I found it pretty easy, to be honest. That's been the hardest part of it, basically. But I found a way around it, and I'm quite happy with it.
Have you ever tried to convince other people that you know?
No. I mean, it's not for me to say. I mean, all my friends and people who I know, they know what my issue was and my problem was. And if they can reflect on that in their own sort of personal lives, that's fair play. But I wouldn't say to anyone, I'm not, who am I to tell people that I think you're this, that, the other, or you're drinking too much? You know, I'm just happy to let it be. I mean, it's not for me to say.
Yours is a really positive story, and you've said a lot of good things about not drinking. Is there anything about it you miss?
I miss talking nonsense with my mates.
Right. Okay.
That is actually the truth. I find that you get to the point where everything's fine, they're all having a good laugh, and then it goes a bit more daft, if you like, and I'm still the same way I was, and I think, oh my God, I can't believe I'm listening to this nonsense.
Right. All right, good talking to you, Raj. Thanks so much for that, and you. Cheers. 0345 6060 973. We're talking about Dry January. It's Alcohol Change UK. These are the people that are spearheading this movement. You probably heard about it. I wonder if you've actually tried it. More and more people are. It started quite small. It's about 4,000 people who started it. And last year, apparently, 200,000 people signed up for the challenge. That's how they're putting it, the challenge. But over and above the 200,000 that signed up, they think that millions of people are now are trying this. And there is a lot of evidence to suggest that younger people are drinking much less than their forebears are. I wonder why that is. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
I'm James O'Brien. Thank you for listening to me on LBC throughout the year.
The independent sentencing review is good enough for everybody else, but what do you use instead?
Personal experience, lived experience. Listen, if they're the facts, they're the facts. But from my lived experience...
They're the facts, but I know better.
They don't understand culture of the UK.
So what is it?
When have I criticised...
What is it? Why can't you tell me what it is? You're criticising people who don't know what the culture of the UK is, so you must be able to tell me.
I can't be asked, buddy. Have a good day.
That went well, didn't it, buddy? I'll be back next week, taking your calls on LBC.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
Your Happy New Year could start right here in London. Hannah entered the Omaze £1 million house draw and won a £4 million house.
House, an actual house!
Paul won a house too.
That's insane.
Now you could be next. And if you enter by midnight tonight,
you could also win a Porsche 911 and £100,000. Noor recently got the keys to her new car.
Oh, my God.
And this time, it could be you.
And here's the best part. You'll be supporting Alzheimer's Society.
So for your chance to win a luxury house in London worth £5 million and the car with the cash, you must enter by midnight tonight at omaze.co.uk. Over 18s only, no purchase necessary, conditions apply. £1 million charity donation.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Dry January is upon us. Well, it is for those who want to take part. It is becoming more popular, and I wonder if you've done it, whether you have decided to continue that on for the rest of the year, or whether you just suffered through 4 weeks and couldn't wait for it to end. Or maybe you just ditched it. Maybe with the best intentions you embarked on that challenge and then just ditched it because you couldn't stand it anymore. 0345-6060-973. Newcastle, Stephen.
Hello, good evening. Hi,
Stephen.
How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Hi, good. I spoke to Mr. Spurrier the other night about alcoholics. I'm an alcoholic, recovered now. I didn't do Dry January, but I think if you can do Dry January, you can get off it. I drank very heavily when I was younger. I was in the Met Police in central London.
Oh, yeah.
Eventually, when I retired, it really caught up with me. I had severe liver problems, that sort of thing.
Huh.
And I now help people have a YouTube channel, which helps people get off it, and you can get off it. But the Dry January thing is a bit of a, well, it's too short a time, really. And people will do it as a bit of a gimmick, but really there's too many people drinking, there's too many people getting ill, and the death rate's increasing from cirrhosis and that sort of thing. So if you can do Dry January, you can do February, March, is my sort of message to people.
I guess so. Yeah, why did you stop?
I had to stop. I had a couple of sort of problems with this, as in I got a lot of anxiety. I went to the doctors. We used to get this thing called diazepam, which is a medication. It's fairly volume. And I was off for 8 years, for between 2006 and 2014, and I relapsed. And I couldn't get the medication again. And then I started to self-medicate with alcohol. I was very ill in 2019. I was told, basically, if you don't stop drinking, you'll die. So I was in hospital for 2.5 years.
Wow. You were in hospital for 2.5 years?
2.5 years, yeah, in and out a little bit. Had ascites, flu, had, well, cirrhosis of the liver, basically.
Right.
But I've recovered from that, and now I still help people now. I've had my YouTube channel. I've about 16,000 subscribers, so I do videos every day about this. I'm trying to get people off it. There's so many problem drinkers, even though I didn't realise, you know, how many people there are with problems. It's incredible. It's actually, I know there's, people say the youngsters aren't drinking as much, but older people, mid-range, 40 or 60, you always are drinking more, in my view. And I've spoken to a couple of doctors about it. But as the other chap was saying, you know, your mental clarity comes back, your health will come back, you can recover. I went up with 9 stone in weight. I was malnourished. It's a sort of miracle, I'm here, really.
When you were drinking, you were 9 stone?
Well, at the end, when it was 2019, I got taken to hospital. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, really bad, malnourished. I had a lot of problems with the liver. And, you know, it was 50-50.
So when people come to you on and ask for your advice on your YouTube channel, what sort of condition do they come to you in?
Also, really, some with severe anxiety, some have been hospitalised. I've got a girl that I speak to regularly who's had a liver transplant. All sorts of people, really. People want general advice as well. Because I tell it how it is. It's a big killer. It's as simple as that. I know from my own experience. I was in the liver ward. In Freeman Hospital, which is a specialist liver transplant hospital in the northeast.
Right.
Fortunately, I didn't have to have a transplant. I had to have a little stent put in my liver to open up the portal vein, because the liver shrinks when you get cirrhosis, you see.
Oh, I thought it was the other way around. I thought it...
No, no.
All right.
No, you can get fatty liver. That's the start of it. And then you get fibrosis, and which goes to cirrhosis, and then obviously the final stage is liver cancer.
Right.
Yeah, so it's very, very complicated. Not complicated, it's very, very dangerous, basically. And, It's a terrible, terrible illness, to be fair. I know a lot of people say you can just moderate it. But if you're a heavy drinker and you're addicted to it, you can never drink again. You can't just have one. That's why people relapse. You've heard of this sort of mantra, you know, one is too much and 1,000 isn't enough.
Right.
So the diet generally is a bit of a gimmick. People need to stop. They need to stop. If they're drinking too much, as you get the risky levels, you know, that's what I mean.
Yeah. But the thing with that, though, is they'll go to their doctor and, you know, for something else, perhaps, and the doctor might routinely ask them how much they drink, and they'll say, you know, I have a bottle of wine maybe 3 or 4 nights a week. And the doctor will say, well, that's just way too much. But for for the people that said that, they don't think that it's too much because it might not be affecting them negatively. So I think that it's sort of, there's a pushback, isn't there, from people who say, well, maybe the medical profession isn't right and I know what's best for myself.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the people, that's what I did. I had a bit of a few warnings that said moderate it, you know. You always tell the doctor less.
Yeah, that's right. That's the other thing. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe a third of what you're drinking.
Right.
Honestly, they do. I mean, I've got a friend who's a GP, just retired. And, you know, he was saying that. But it's much more risky and dangerous than the general public imagine.
So when people come to you for advice on how to drink less, other than just saying, just drink less, what do you tell them?
First of all, try the GP for medication. It's very difficult to get medication now in the UK because they said that the benzos, you say benzodiazepines, these sort of medication you get are quite addictive. Now, you can taper off the booze very slowly. If you try to stop, when I was 40, I took some leave from the Met and came north. I spent a couple of weeks with my parents, and I thought, I'll just stop. And I stopped cold turkey, as it was, as it were then. And I had seizures, ended up in hospital. It's very dangerous to stop suddenly.
Because that's what dry January is. Now, it's not necessarily for people. It might not have that effect with people who are just, you know, ordinary, regular drinkers, not people who have the problem that you've described that you had.
Yeah.
They might not have that sort of negative physical effect of just stopping dead. But it must be difficult for somebody who is a problem drinker to just stop on a dime.
But there are a lot more problem drinkers than you imagine. It's so available, you see, and it's so socially acceptable. It's more dangerous to withdraw from alcohol than it is from heroin. It's very, very, it's very complex. It's weaved its way into society, you see, alcohol. And people think they're just having 2 or 3 pints 2 or 3 times a week. Every drink causes you problems over time. I know people aren't at the extreme level than I am, but there's about 2.5 million problem drinkers in the UK at the moment, and that's increasing. Not particularly amongst the youngsters, as you mentioned, but, you know, middle-aged, that's all.
And
females. I mean, 35% increase in liver disease deaths in females in the last 5 years. That's a massive increase. Lots of problems through COVID.
Right.
It'll get worse with the recession when there's more unemployed people. And AI comes in, take jobs. Huge problem.
Well, appreciate you telling us all that, Stephen. Thanks very much.
Ta-da. Just tell you about this YouTube channel. Stephen Alcohol Free Lifestyle. If anyone wants to join there, there's lots of information on there. There's about 2,000 videos. And get in touch if you can, if they need any advice.
All right. Very good.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. 0345-6060-973. Susan says, just saying, New Zealand has dry July, not dry January. Of course, in New Zealand, that July is the middle of winter, I think, isn't it? So, same kind of thing, but at least July doesn't follow Christmas, not even in New Zealand. Johnny Newcastle says, excuse me, I tried dry January last year and I've never drunk again. It was the best thing I've ever done. And feel so much fresher in the morning. Southend. Hello, Christopher.
Nick.
Christopher.
How do you do?
Good, thanks.
I'm an alcoholic. I'm 55 years of age. I've been drinking. When I first found alcohol, at 16, I used to be very shy. And I had a couple of pints. I thought, this is brilliant. And by the age of 20, I could not function without booze. I held on a job. I used to work at Moving Picture Company in London.
Yeah.
Post production.
Right.
I had a really good job, but drink was everywhere. You could just help yourself. I'm struggling at the minute, Nick. Struggling
how?
Well, I live in Southend, and there's a place called Starts, which is a lovely company that helps alcoholics and drug addicts. And I go to groups, and I'm waiting to go. I've been to many, many detoxes and rehabs. I'm ashamed of that. but I can't get it out of my mind, even when I'm so, if when I'm completely clean, even for 2 years, it's still in my mind, ringing like an annoying bell.
Do you have a like a sort of a buddy system with the places that you go? Is there a, is have you got like a friend to call when you feel tempted?
Oh no, I'm actively drinking now.
Oh, you are, right.
I'm not clean at the minute. I want to be, but at the same time, I love drinking. It's a very, very hard rock and a hard place, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm not the right person to give you advice, but probably the groups that you go to, don't stop doing that.
No, I won't. I will persevere, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right, well...
It's upsetting my relationship with my partner.
Yeah. Well, and that's
my life.
It's the first step to getting better is to know that you've got a problem, and you know that. And I do wish you all the best. Thanks very much for that, Christopher. Now, we are going to change the subject after the news. King Charles has called for what he describes as an eco-revolution. He says the planet must be respected for humanity to survive. This comes in a documentary where the king will highlight the urgent action needed to help protect our planet. Do you agree with the king that we need an eco-revolution? And if so, exactly what needs to change? 0345 6060 973. Ordinarily, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10. Nick Abbott, LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight, Switzerland's president says a moment of joy turned into tragedy when around 40 people were killed in a fire at a ski resort. More than 100 people were injured last night at Camp Montana. A 16-year-old who survived the flames told reporters he'd seen waitresses carrying champagne bottles with sparklers. Journalist in Switzerland, Julia Hamilton, has been to the scene.
There's been quite a few witness accounts of what might have happened there, some of their birthday candles and some flares, but the police have refused to confirm any of those witness accounts. The police actually have said very little at this stage about the cause of the fire because, of course, they are conducting an investigation.
The king said he's greatly saddened. Zoran Mamdani has promised a new era for New York City in his first speech as mayor. The Democratic Socialist told crowds at his inauguration he was advised to lower their expectations, but would do no such thing. Labour MPs told LBC the high street will collapse without changes to what she called an excruciating rise in business rates. Rachel Maskell says she's pleading with the government to listen to backbenchers and to ideas from business for reforming the tax. But James Daunt, the managing director of Waterstones, told LBC he's optimistic about the future of the high street.
I think it's coming back, and I think at last the government is doing things to support the high street. We went through this long period in which, you know, particularly the iniquity of the way in which the high street was taxed through business rates. Online isn't taxed in the same way.
The Treasury has said it's offering clear support to help businesses recover and grow. A deal with the US, which could mean the NHS paying billions more for medicines, should be scrapped, according to the Liberal Democrats. The agreement was reached recently with American imports of UK pharmaceuticals being tariff-free in return. The government says the deal is a vital investment that builds on the strength of our health service. Several people have been killed in Iran as cost-of-living protests spread. The demonstrations that began on Sunday among Tehran shopkeepers have spread to further groups and regions. The new year is beginning with an icy blast. Severe weather warnings for ice and snow in Northern Ireland and much of Wales and central and southern England have just come into force. And further Met Office warnings for heavy snow showers have been issued for northern Scotland later this morning. LBC weather. Snow showers will feed into northern Scotland overnight, and rain with some snow will move across Northern Ireland into Wales, central and some southern parts of England. Lows of -3 to -6 Celsius. Heavy snow in northern Scotland tomorrow, sunny elsewhere, and highs of -2 to -6 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
A documentary is going to be released about King Charles' call to revolution. It's a body of work that he says hopes that it will spread his philosophy about humanity and nature to a new audience. A spokesman for his foundation said the documentary aims to showcase the importance of harmony across nature, sustainability and the environment. And it's based on a book of his that came out in 2010. And the hope is that more people will be welcoming and open to the suggestions that he made in that book in 2010 today. Let's talk about this with Professor Christian Dunn. He is an environmental scientist and commentator at Bangor University and joins us on the line now. Hello, Professor.
Hello, thank you very much for having me on.
I appreciate your time. Do you think that we have become more receptive to these sort of ideas since 2010?
Yes and no. I think that we know that we have to do something about the crises that we are facing when it comes to the environment. I'm thinking about climate change or climate breakdown. I'm also thinking about biodiversity loss and also the kind of pollution issues that we're seeing in our rivers and our seas and our oceans. But I also fear that we have had the message banged into us in so many negative ways that we have become either opposed to it or at the best blasé to it. So I think it is great that the king has come forward in this way. He's obviously always been a leader in this way of thinking, but he seems to be doing it in a fantastically positive way from what I can see, and that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, there does seem to be an increasing resistance to believing in things like climate change, for instance. What do you put that down to?
I worry that so much of this has become politicised and then obviously then polarised as well. So you're either a believer or you are against it. Like, I don't like those expressions when it comes to something that is, you know, basically scientific. You know, not you believe, you look at the data, you look at the evidence. But I do blame myself and others in my area of environmental scientists because I think that we have been far too negative when it comes to the issues that we're facing. We are facing crises, but if we tackle these in the right way, we can do this in such a way that it's incredibly positive, not only for the direct issue that we're attacking or trying to sort out, like biodiversity, but also many additional stacked benefits of doing this. And I think that message has been forgotten. For an example, we must use the natural ecosystems, habitats, to help us protect us from the effects of climate change. An example of that would be using wetland habitats, marshes and fens and bogs, to reduce the risks of flooding, to reduce the risks of drought as well, and to clean our rivers. And if we do it in the right way, not only will we help protect us from climate change, it will actually reduce the effects of it, but also we will live in a better, cleaner, greener country. And that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, you say you blame people such as yourself. Now, the king himself is calling for dramatic steps, that's his phrase, and a revolution in thinking. Is that the kind of talk that is going to be frightening for many? Is it really necessary to talk like that to jolt us out of our passivity?
Well, first of all, I think it's very brave of any head of state to call for a revolution, especially a king. But I think it is exactly the right way of expressing this. I think we must move away from political and, dare I say, meaningless slogans, such as, for example, net zero, with arbitrary targets and dates given. And instead, we need to have a radical rethink about how we see ourselves as part of nature. And I think actually the trailer says this incredibly, the king says this incredibly well. He says that we are a part of nature, not apart from nature. And I think that if we can start to think about that and forget the, you know, the targets and things like that, we all know we have to get to this, these points, but instead let's just rethink about how we use our resources, how we get rid of our waste, how we reduce our waste, how we look after and harness the capabilities of our natural ecosystems. That is what we have to do as a society if we really do want to take these issues seriously and tackle them in a serious, mature and holistic way.
Yeah, but targets, if people set targets, then it does give you an idea of what the end destination is and how quickly it would be best to get there. If you don't set targets at all, then people will perhaps won't even think about it.
I agree to that to a certain degree, but we've all seen, obviously, you know, even things about, you know, the electric vehicles and things, the targets can be very easily moved because they are simply political targets and are very arbitrary, not really specifically set in any kind of scientific context. And this is why, instead of, and I agree that we all need something to aim for, but what we actually need to aim for here is something far greater than a reduction in emissions, for example. We need a radical rethink about how we live on this unique planet which we live in, if we want to do that in a sustainable way so that it is viable for many future generations.
Do you think that part of the resistance is exactly that, that if we are going to protect where we live, then we're going to have to change our lifestyles, and people just don't want to do that?
I think yes, but I think, again, this is where myself and other environmental scientists have failed. We've only banged on about the negatives. And instead, what we have to think about is if we want to make sure that we live in a sustainable way, this is not a negative approach. If we do it right, it will increase the economy, because let's face it, we don't want to be doing anything like this if it's going to mean that, you know, we're going back to the dark ages and, you know, we don't have a strong economy. We have to keep the economy going, but we have to bring different disciplines together in a very positive way to make sure that we're doing this right. And we have to do it so that our own well-being, our mental, physical well-being, our environment all benefits from it, and there are examples of where that happens, and we should stress those rather than the negatives. If you don't do this, this will happen.
Yeah, I mean, our economy is to a certain extent based on fossil fuels, isn't it? And at every turn, the fossil fuel giants have resisted the call to use less of their products. They seem to have captured the Republican Party in America and reform and the Tories here. They flood social media accounts with talk of stupid net, or net stupid zero is the phrase, and how renewable energy is woke, stupid phrases like that. And people willingly support these ideas, and they claim that climate change isn't real, and even if it is, it's not humans that have caused it. It's almost as though humanity has a death wish. Do you think the king can make any headway against that tide?
I think that the more voices with the authority and the weight behind them, such as the king, speaking about this, speaking about it, though, in a positive way, not a negative way, not, oh, we must do this, otherwise we'll all be, you know, doom and gloom. No, let's talk about it in a positive way. And someone like the king can only help this. I hate it. It has become so politicised and so polarised, this argument, but this is an issue which is beyond politics and should be beyond any sort of polarisation as well. We should all be wanting to move in the right direction.
I mean, the most visible organisation in this field would perhaps be the UN climate change conferences, that appear to have achieved very little over 30 iterations. And our weather, in the meantime, has become measurably more extreme. The last 10 years were the hottest years ever recorded. Is it going to take something a little bit more than a documentary on Amazon presented by the king to get us to do something?
It most certainly will. And you talk about the COP conference, the parties there, and, you know, without a doubt, will agree that they have not been as effective as they should have been. However, I will stress that that is just the headlines. Behind the scenes, there is often a lot of issues tackled and issues supported which benefit hugely our planet, but they're not as sexy as kind of the headline hitting, let's reduce X by Y, etc. But behind the scenes, there is an awful lot of good that often comes out of those conferences of the parties. Do they need a rethink and a rejig? Oh, yeah, most certainly. But let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater.
We were talking about targets and such, and they're very specific, and people can understand specific examples. Now, the King is calling for the importance of harmony to be addressed, harmony across nature, sustainability and the environment, which all seems very vague. Do you think it is a bit too wishy-washy a message?
That's an interesting point. I would actually look at it a different way, and that is saying that we have, so many of us in Western society, become estranged, separated from nature. And I think that if we really are going to tackle these issues, biodiversity, climate breakdown, pollution issues, waste issues, then actually we need to have a reason to want to do it. And I think there is no greater reason to want to look after the environment and the natural world than to get outside and understand what a beautiful, fantastic, essential part of all our lives nature is. And we have become detached from that. And I think that we need to, and it may sound wishy-washy, but I think it is fundamental that everybody, all of us, get out and understand how important nature is. An example of that is that now there is evidence to suggest that in the UK and America and most Western countries, the average person spends 90% of their time indoors. That is, if you think about it, staggering. We are not supposed to be indoors all that time. We are supposed to be, as the King says, part of nature. Being indoors all that time is not going to help that. We have to get out, understand what a wonderful nature, how wonderful nature is. And nature is not something over there. You don't have to climb a mountain to be in nature. You have to step outside your front door and walk along even a pavement and look between the cracks of what's growing there. Nature is all around us, and we have to start appreciating that if we really are going to tackle these serious issues.
Yeah, and we are all connected. That is something that's easily understandable, but the extension of that is that others' behaviour is important to us. And if we, on this tiny island, act to protect the environment, people might think, well, it won't have much effect anyway, because China remains the world's biggest polluter, India shortly probably will be, and Donald Trump seems determined to beat both of them at that. So what difference can we make?
I think then we have to take a far more kind of bigger scale look at this. Yes, okay. If you look at China, actually, some of the work that they're doing there, you know, they're electrifying their cities on a huge scale. It's quite impressive. But yes, of course, we are a small contribution to the issues on the planet. But, you know, wouldn't we like Britain, the United Kingdom, to be a leader in this? We led the world in so many things. Abolishment of slavery, for example. You know, let's think about what we can actually show the world, what can be done. Is it going to change overnight? Of course it's not. Do we need to bring more, the bigger countries on board? Of course we do. But if we just like say, oh, well, we can't do anything, well, what's the point? I mean, for goodness sake, we have to step up and do what we can, with the huge caveat that we also have to be pragmatic about this, and we have to do it in a holistic way. We have to do it in a way which is not going to destroy our economy. In fact, we have to do it in a way which is going to improve our economy. And if we do it right, it can do. But if so, let's, for goodness sake, show the world a little bit of leadership in this way.
Do you think that there's an age issue here, that older people tend to vote for political parties that are against even talking about this sort of thing? Reform are very anti, or everything that we're talking about, the Conservatives don't seem to care. Young people don't vote for those parties. Young people would vote more for the Greens and perhaps the Labour Party, but not in enough numbers for those parties, with the exception of the Greens, of course, to actually address these issues seriously. Do you think that as the resistant elderly drop off the end of life's conveyor belt, that political parties will actually start to address this issue more seriously?
Yes, I think that, I mean, I'm a lecturer at Bangor University, and the people that I lecture, they are utterly passionate about these issues, as they should be. I think, though, that any moving forward in a few, in next election or next left for that, any party which doesn't take these crises, the environment, climate, biodiversity, seriously, is going to feel the effect, the anger about that, because it is not going to be long before we as a country start to genuinely experience the problems that a changing climate will have on us. In France, for example, when I was in France on holiday a year or two, a couple of years ago, chatting to vineyard owners, and they are saying to me that they are seeing a 20% at least decrease in their production of grapes because of climate change. And even in farming in the UK, I think Jeremy Clarkson has proven this as well, or shown this as well, that with the farmers in the UK are having to change their cropping regimes because of climate change. And it's not going to be very long before all of us start to feel and see the effects of a changing climate in our country. And any political party that doesn't grasp that is, I think, going to feel it in the ballot box.
Yeah, I mean, Jeremy Clarkson is an odd person to take a lead on this issue. And of course, he does now because it's affecting him personally. Do you think that the message that's coming from the king is coming from somebody that it's difficult to take seriously on this issue? I mean, the average family's carbon footprint is between 6 and 12 tonnes a year. The royal family's carbon footprint is about 3,800 tonnes, 400 times as much as your average family. Isn't he the last person in the country we should take advice from on environmental issues?
I think everyone in any form of any type of leadership should be making their point about this issue or what we can do about it. Some people, as you quite rightly point out, will not take the king seriously about this because of his carbon footprint, etc., and that's fine. Some people will, though. Other people will look to Jeremy Clarkson for leadership, and Jeremy Clarkson is speaking out about this issue as well to a certain degree. And so I think that if enough people of in any sort of leadership start to speak out about this in their own way to their own audiences, then that can only be a good thing, and they must start doing it. We all must start doing it.
Very good to talk to you, Professor. Thanks so much for your time. That is Professor Christian Dunn, environmental scientist and commentator at Bangor University. So what do you make of this? Then the king is calling for a revolution, and a documentary in which he calls for that is going to be released. I think it's coming on Amazon Prime. It's going to be called Finding Harmony. That's going to be the message that he's putting forwards. His vision includes, he's being supported in this by certain celebrities, including David Beckham. A spokesman for the King's Foundation says this documentary aims to showcase the importance of harmony to a new audience and highlight the urgent action needed to help protect the planet. And as I said before, it comes from his 2010 book, which was called Harmony, A New Way of Looking at Our World. And the idea is that this film will be a lot more easily digestible than the dense text in a book that came out in 2010. But if it was so very important in 2010, why does the message need to be reiterated now? 0345 6060 973 LBC.
LBC.
Fine. Me somebody to love.
The Dream Sale ends Tuesday. Don't miss up to 40% off. Dreams. Love your bed.
Get that Euro Millions feeling this Friday. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to celebrate. Not a bad way to start the new year. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app.
Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Nothing beats that just booked feeling. Because when you book a Jet2 holiday, you start dreaming of pool days and seeing the sights. Get ahead for summer with just a £25 deposit per person for a limited time only. Choose from our best rooms and hotels and save £200 per couple. Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. Package holidays you can trust. After National Protected. £25 deposit available from 19th of December to 12th of January. Subject to availability and conditions.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
I mean, I guess you could nitpick the King talking about that he is concerned about, you know, the state of the planet, given that he lives in castles, palaces, manors, houses, cottages, halls, estates, and so on. But he could just spend his time ordering the servants around and blasting birds out of the sky. So it is at least a positive thing. I just wonder whether it being with David Beckham in this is perhaps the not the right celebrity, because there can't be many people on Earth that travel so much, first class, take so many extravagant holidays on yachts, live in bigger houses than David Beckham and his family. Maybe the selection of celebrities to support the message is a bit tin-eared, but the message is important enough for him to first write a book about it and now appear in a documentary about it. What do you make of it? 0345 6060 973. Carnforth. Hello, Annie.
Hello, Nick.
Annie.
Well, I just think he's completely right about there needs to be a complete revolution in the way we live. Otherwise, there is going to be no livable planet in another 50-odd years' time. And, you know, I think people just don't, they're kind of just closing their eyes to it. And the billionaire-owned media, of course they're going to put over all this propaganda that, oh, it's not really happening, climate change isn't really a thing, and of course there's Trump doing it as well, because, you know, they're in with the big companies, in with the big
well, they're invested
fossil fuel
in
companies.
Yeah, they're invested, yeah, they're invested in the fossil fuel business.
Yeah, so and also just in modern industrial farming as well. I mean, Britain is one of the most nature depleted countries in Europe. And the amount of birds that were common, really common, when I was young, not even that much younger, when I was in my 30s, you know, starlings, sparrows, just really, really common birds. They are, you know, their numbers are just dropping off.
Yeah, because,
it's scary.
Apart from anything else, is because of the equally disastrous decline in the insect population.
Yes, it's terrible. Bees particularly, and that's a lot to do with chemicals used in industrial farming. I mean, I think we have to rethink completely the way we're eating, the way we farm. That there's a lot of talk now about regenerative farming, which is going back to farming more in harmony with nature. It's not necessarily organic, but if anybody wants a good book to read on that, that's very interesting, and it's not dry, and it's a very interesting read. It's called English Pastoral by James Rebanks, who is a Cumbrian farmer who has completely changed the way he farms.
Well, the farming industry is sort of overlooked as far as pollution and its effects on the wildlife is concerned. We think that they are, you know, they are protecting the land, but it's actually the reverse of that. They're creating monocultures, which are not natural at all, and the consequence of that is, and the pesticides that they use is, as we've said, the insect population has gone down, and the birds feed on those insects, so their population has decreased as well.
Yeah, and I mean, bees, if we don't have bees and other pollinators, we're going to be starving as well.
Well, that's right.
We need them to pollinate the crops.
There's almost nothing that we eat that is not pollinated by insects, and they do such complicated and infinitesimally small work that we can't copy it. There's nothing that we can do that, that in any way can replicate what they do. So we will be in big trouble once the bumblebees die out.
Absolutely. And we have to do something about it. It's no good kind of just carrying on. And I think things have got worse. I think things have gone backwards, particularly with people like Nigel Farage and other really right-wing people who are in league with all the big, you know, like the fossil fuel companies and probably, you know, the industrial farming, certainly fossil fuel companies, a lot of politicians, not just Nigel Farage and Reform, you know, are being lobbied by them, take money off them.
It does amaze me, really, that the people that are persuading us that climate change is not real and that humans have, and even if it is, humans have nothing to do with it, they think that, I don't know what they think, that their money will protect them from climate change. Well, they're in for a big surprise. Go on.
Well, I was going to say, a lot of them seem to be quite a lot older, but surely a lot of them have children and grandchildren.
You'd think.
They just don't care. I don't know. It's, you know, fast fashion, everything we're doing, it's all wrong. We've just got to have a radical change.
And we are the only species that damages its own environment. I mean, if that doesn't tell you that we're living a life out of balance, I don't know what does. But I wonder if people are just so resistant to this message because it does entail them, I mean, if you follow through on it, changing their lifestyle, and people just don't want to do that.
They don't. But actually, as far as politicians are concerned, the Greens are just soaring up the polls at the moment. In fact, they've been, in a few polls, they've been on the level with the Labour Party at the moment.
Well, so, Zach Polanski is, of all of the leaders of the major political parties, is the most popular in the country at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm. You know, I think he's brilliant. He's a really good speaker. He pushes back against all this stuff.
Yeah.
Because well, he's taken the Greens. The are doing.
Yeah, he's taken the Green Party from the, like, typically it was the 3% party to, now they're in double digits. It's extraordinary. But what a brief period his tenure, the effect that it's had.
It's because he's left wing as well. I mean, he's a socialist and green, you know, which is what a lot of people want.
Well, it's what they young people want, and they are keen to vote for him. I mean, if you look at the polling for the ages, you get past 50 and you want reform under 30 and you want the Green Party and the Labour Party. And Ian, we'll have to leave it there, but thanks for that. More of your calls on this. We're going to take a brief break for the news. Still to come in this hour, we're going to look at the weather because that has changed significantly just lately. We're also going to check in with our US correspondent. But I'll come back with more of your calls on this subject after this news break with Matt Hewitt.
Switzerland's president says a moment of joy turned to tragedy when around 40 people were killed in a fire at a ski resort. 42 ambulances, 150 paramedics and 70 firefighters were sent to Crans-Montana last night. A vaccine which protects against chickenpox will be given across the NHS for the first time. One-year-olds will be offered protection against the usually mild but potentially fatal infection along with the MMR vaccine. Zoran Mamdani has told crowds at his inauguration he won't abandon his principles for fear of being called radical. The Democratic Socialist promised a new era for New York City in his first speech as mayor. LBC weather. Snow showers will feed into northern Scotland overnight and rain with some snow will move across Northern Ireland into Wales, central and some southern parts of England. Lows of -3 to -6 Celsius. Heavy snow in northern Scotland tomorrow. Sunny elsewhere. Highs of -2 to -6 degrees.
This is LBC.
It's often those perfectly imperfect holiday moments we remember the most. Like when us adults sit down for dinner, the kids go jumping in the pool, leaving us with soggy sausages. At SBL Villas, we can't guarantee a dry dinner. But with beautiful villas across stunning Mediterranean locations, it is the perfect place for modern families to make memories. So, visit sblvillas.com. SBL
Villas. It's another day at Screwfix, and Sir Mo Farah is still getting to grips with things.
So, Mo, with Sprint Delivery, we get the order to them in as little as 20 minutes. Mo?
Mo?
Done. He was on the 18th floor.
Nice work. But, you know we use delivery riders, right?
Oh, now you tell me.
Sprint it in as little as 20 minutes. Screwfix. No stopping you. Conditions and geographical restrictions apply.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott.
We're talking about what King Charles is describing as a call to revolution. He is releasing a documentary which is based on a book that he published in 2010 called Harmony, A New Way of Looking at Our World. And I wonder what you think of his message and the messenger. Hackney. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Nick. I do agree with Charles that there needs to be a revolution. I'm not quite sure it's the one he has in mind. But the thing with this issue of the destruction of the climate is we've got to accept that living in an environmentally sustainable way on a planet with finite resources and a very delicate ecosystem is just not compatible with capitalism. And that's where we go wrong.
Well, it's not compatible with the capitalism that we've got, which some say is a sort of a twisted form of it. Just because it's just because people are making money, it shouldn't mean that we have a life out of balance. I mean, you know, capitalism is not something that wants to eat itself. It wants to survive, and it won't if we continue down the path that we're on. But I think that message is so bad that people just resist it.
I don't think capitalism wants to survive. You said earlier that we're the only species that doesn't seem to care about whether we survive or not.
Well, our environment, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, that's not true. Very early in early biology classes, what we did is we took a plate of nutrient and we dropped a bacteria in it. And for a while, the bacteria went really well. Their population just shot up. And then they reached a tipping point where the amount of pollution the bacteria were producing killed off new bacteria. And the whole colony just collapses. It's called the sigmoid curve. And I look at the way that we're going as humans, and I just see an enormous sigmoid curve.
That's kind of depressing. We haven't evolved beyond bacteria. Thanks, Richard. I'm going to have to move on. Hi, I'm Mike.
Hello, Nick.
Mike.
Yeah. Very briefly, before I make my point, could I talk about, very briefly, Polanski? Yeah. Yeah, this is a chap who wants women to think.
Yeah. I know.
You we're running. Know all about that,
yeah,
so.
I know. We're running out of time, so you're going to have to make your point.
Yeah. I'll make my point. Watch the TV tonight, and it was about what's happening in India, and a farmer, and I could not believe this. It's hard to describe. The farmers there are burning the stubble land after their corn has been.
Yeah.
Taken in. They're burning the stub.
That's normal.
And it's thousands and thousands of acres are burning. It's
right.
Absolutely, it looked like it was an apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, we've got, how do we contain that then?
Right, so your point is that if they're doing that, what's the point of us, nipping and tucking our own lifestyle?
No, I'm not saying that.
All right.
I'm just saying, how can we influence that? The farmer was interviewed,
yeah.
And he said he's going to continue doing that.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know.
Well, yeah. I know. The more you look, the more it seems like we're not helping ourselves. But, it doesn't mean, I mean, I know you're not saying it, but it doesn't mean that we can't do anything just because other people are sort of pushing us in the opposite direction. You know, as the saying goes, every little counts. Or helps, that's how the saying goes. Mike, I'm going to have to leave it there. Sorry for that. You will have noticed that it's got considerably colder lately. Let's get a weather update.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott.
Well, you can't have failed to notice that the weather has taken something of a turn. Let's talk about that with John Hammond. John is a meteorologist and chief forecaster for the website Weather Trending. Hello, John.
Good evening, Nick.
Well, it really has got cold out. Where's this weather coming from?
Well, normally in winter in this part of the world, we have two options. It either comes from the east or it comes from the north. And this one's coming straight down from the north, almost literally from the North Pole, Nick. I mean, it's set to be certainly the coldest spell of the winter so far, which is not saying much because we've had another relatively mild start to the winter. But this is going to provide some challenges up and down the UK, I think, over the next week or even longer, actually. It's the prolonged nature of this the spell, potentially, which is going to catch the eye. And yeah, there will be impacts, and not just across the, you know, the usual suspects, you know, the north of Scotland, for example. I think many of us through the week ahead will encounter some snow at some stage. So yeah, an impactful spell. And just looking at the charts, as I have done over the last hour or so, there's no clear sign that it's going to end in a hurry. So yeah, an interesting spell coming up.
We've been sort of led into a false sense of security with the winter so far. It did seem particularly warm. Is that a usual start to the winter? We just expect winter to be particularly cold, and we don't sort of take on board that it really isn't? Or was it unusual?
I mean, the default these days is that winters are mild, and this has been yet another, you know, mild start to another potentially mild winter. When we look back at the stats for the winter, you know, come the springtime, you know, it would be surprising if we've had a cold winter, because nearly all winters these days are mild, and that comes off the back of a record-breakingly warm year. In fact, the stats just about to be issued will confirm that that this year just gone has been the warmest on record in the UK. So when we get a cold spell, and because of the variable nature of our climate, we will occasionally, you know, still get the odd cold spell. When we get a cold spell, it provides more of a shock to the system, and people just aren't prepared. You know, people, you know, like myself, you know, I was rooting around for the scraper for my car first thing this morning. And I'm sure up and down the country, people are thinking, have I got a de-icer? Because when was the last time I used it? So although, you know, in the grand scheme of things, this spell, which we're about to have, is not going to break any records either in terms of temperature or snowfall, I think it's just the fact that we're becoming more and more used to warm winters, that when we do get the odd cold spell, it causes more disruption than it would have done 30 or 40 years ago.
So 2025 is going to become the warmest year. Is that globally or just in this country on record?
That's potentially, that is, all the stats have to be verified, of course, but that's for the UK, Nick.
Right. And am I right in thinking that all of the top 10 warmest years have been in the last 10 years?
Just about. I can't tell you definitively whether it's all of the top 10 or it's something like that. But yeah, I mean, the stats that are uncontravenable. I mean, they are showing you that we get warmer years, warmer winters, warmer springs, warmer summers and autumns now than we used to. There's a definite trend. That trend will continue, if not accelerate. But I must reiterate, because of our variable climate, occasionally we will get cold spells, and we're about to embark on one. And yeah, it'll be a reminder of what winters used to be perhaps 30 or 40 years ago. So you know, there will be, you know, not to belittle the fact that some places will be affected by heavy snowfall over the next few days. In fact, already across the north of Scotland, Nick, the snow is piling up, and there's an amber warning in force for the Highlands, particularly the northeast of Scotland. There will be disruption. There will be road closures here through the next few days. Later on, overnight and into the first part of the morning, actually, we're looking at a band of sleet and snow, which might give a light covering pushing down through Northern Ireland, Wales, the Midlands, and even southern counties of England. You might get a light dusting first thing in the morning. It shouldn't cause too much in the way of disruption. But again, some places haven't seen a flake of snow so far this winter, so it'll be noteworthy nonetheless. And for the next few days, Nick, northerly winds will prevail. So we're going to continue with more of the same, really. Places exposed to that northerly wind that's picking up moisture off the sea, those are the places which are going to get most of the snowfall. I must stress that a lot of the UK, actually, over the next few days, though it will be very cold with sharp frost, it'll be sunny, it'll be crisp, it'll be bright. It'll be an invigorating spell of weather in some senses if you wear plenty of layers, and layers will be required because, overnight, over snow cover, I think, you know, minus 10, minus 12 degrees is quite possible. And through the daytime, we'll barely get above freezing, I think, even across southern counties.
Might it counterintuitively be that in the future we get more snow? Because I believe that climate scientists were predicting that we would get wetter weather because of the rise in sea temperatures would create more storms and that would create more rain and so on. And we've just gone through an unusually dry period. But in the winter, as you've just said, because of the cold, the rain would fall as snow. So is it likely that as the climate warms, we're actually going to get more snow?
Ooh. I think that that's possible in other parts of the world where, you know, typically the winter temperatures are well below freezing. And what happens then is that, you know, the colder air actually holds less moisture. And actually most snowfall occurs when temperatures are closer to freezing, because it's that much warmer. It can hold more moisture. And so actually you get more snowfall. For our part of the world, typically in winter time, temperatures are never far from freezing anyway. And I think a rise in temperature, and this part of the world has already risen, the mean temperature has already risen by a degree or degree and a half. Over the next 20 or 30 years, actually, as those temperatures continue to rise, I think what it will mean is actually on average, we'll get less snowfall, because whereas now, you know, we get a cold spell and temperatures are just about low enough for snow. Cast your minds forward 20 or 30 years, and actually those temperatures will be above freezing typically, so that we'll actually get less snowfall. I know where you're coming from, and I think that rule applies in other parts of the world where, you know, the default is that temperatures are well below freezing, and as they come up a little bit, so the air has more moisture and it produces more snowfall. So Arctic regions, for example, Greenland, those places, because of global warming, actually will have more moisture in the air and potentially more snowfall. But for the UK, I think it's more likely that the snowy spells that we get, such as the one we're getting over the next week or so, what would fall as snow in a future climate will fall as rain.
And you mentioned that we've got an amber weather warning. These colours do get thrown out a lot,
yeah.
And without much explanation as to what they mean. What does it mean?
Amber is sort of mid-range, if you like. The yellow is the lowest range, it's the lowest value, it's the lowest colour, it's the lowest impact of warning, the yellow warning is. When you get up to amber, that means that, you know, we are expecting a significant disruption, be it to transport, be it perhaps to power lines with accumulation of snow on power lines that can cause outages. There will be some road closures, that sort of thing. So it's a sort of a higher tier compared to yellow. A yellow warning really means, yeah, it'll be a bit of a nuisance, but no major impacts. Amber, there will be impacts. There will be road closures. There could be some power outages. And as we go up to red, which is rare, and we very rarely get a red snow warning, that's a risk to life. That means that the communities will be dislocated, and that means that you know, it will have a major impact not only on infrastructure but potentially on lives. We're not there yet. Whether we get a red warning through the week ahead, it's possible. I'd be surprised, but certainly it's a mark of how severe this spell will be over the next few days that we've already got an amber warning in force for parts of Scotland. So I think the message is, Nick, that through the next few days, I am expecting impacts up and down the UK, some of which will be significant. There will be some you know, major dislocation of transport routes, I fancy, as we go into next week, potentially, as some of that warmer, moister air tries to push in off the Atlantic, and the charts indicate that that could well happen later on next week. Weather systems trying to push in from the Atlantic, bringing a lot of moisture as they hit that block of cold air, which will have built up across the UK. I think there could be more widespread impacts through the mid to latter part of next week in the form of heavy snowfall. So that's one to watch. I think what's notable about this spell is that it will go on for a week or more. Most of our cold spells these days only last a couple of days. That won't be the case this time around. So if you're just sort of listening to this and thinking, oh, well, it's just another couple of days of cold weather and then it's going to get milder again, that's not the case. I think we could well be talking about this cold spell in a week's time, for example.
Very good to talk to you, John. Thanks very much for that. John Hammond, meteorologist, chief forecaster for the website Weather Trending. Now we're going to take a short break and then come back and talk to our US correspondent from Washington, D.C. This is LBC.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Clive Bull.
Labour is being urged to reset for the new year, but how possible is that? And you can no longer post a letter in Denmark. Are we going to end up the same way?
Clive Bull. At 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
When you're smiling, the whole world.
goes with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Fanning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable, and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
FanningDental.co.uk.
Hello, this is my mum's work phone. I've re-recorded her voicemail because I'm 8 and I've never had a holiday where she hasn't been distracted by work. This hotel has 2 pools and 3 water slides and she promised to take me shopping. So, before you leave her a message, maybe don't.
Take your holiday seriously. British Airways Holidays. Atoll protected.
Check your retirement savings are on track with PensionBee's easy-to-use app. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Right then, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Anglers, ramblers, climbers, five-a-siders, surfers, gamers, bikers, hang gliders! Book clubbers, are we up for it? Let's go all in against cancer, all in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up now and save 30% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends January 31st, 2026. T's and C's apply.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Let's check in to see what has been happening in America with the Washington Bureau Chief at The Guardian, David Smith, who joins us on the line now. Good evening, David.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks. Zoran Mamdani, let's talk about him. He was just sworn in as the mayor of New York City. What's he been promising the people of New York?
Yeah, this was a bit of an epic moment. The first Muslim mayor of New York, first of South Asian descent, first to be born in Africa, first sworn in using the Quran. And Zoran Mamdani was sort of unabashed in his ambitions to govern as a democratic socialist, as he put it. He said, you know, I will not abandon my principles for fear of being called radical. And in the first instance, you know, he's promised free buses and higher taxes on the rich and really tackling the housing crisis in New York, trying to freeze subsidized rents and so on. And it was telling, his inauguration featured Senator Bernie Sanders, another Democratic Socialist, and Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, also of New York. It was the kind of left-wing dream, really. And, you know, it was a former New York governor, Mario Cuomo, who coined that famous phrase about campaigning in poetry and governing in prose. And I think that'll be particularly acute with Mamdani. He certainly campaigned in poetry, and it was a very exciting, inspiring campaign. But you know, as he acknowledged, and other speakers acknowledged, it's going to be even tougher now in the sort of nitty-gritty of governance, and fascinating to watch in the coming months.
Yes, he said he's not going to propose small changes. Big changes is more his thing. He says he doesn't want to be accused of lacking the courage to try. So how are New Yorkers taking that?
Yeah, and he acknowledged in his speech that people like Bill de Blasio, the mayor 12 years ago, and others prior to that, going back decades, you know, we've often been at a similar moment, someone coming in promising a bold approach to tackling inequality, and, you know, some are more successful than others. But New Yorkers seem eager for it. You know, he had a big turnout in his inauguration. His election, he had sort of record numbers of young people voting for him. I think probably two reasons for that. One was that Mamdani's message was all about affordability and a cost of living, and people feel that in New York more acutely than anywhere in the country. So that really resonated, and people in the crowd today were chanting, tax the rich. You know, they really want to see some of that dealt with. And secondly, I think impossible to divorce from what's going on 200 miles away in Washington with Donald Trump in the White House. You know, it felt yet another of those symbolic moments in America, that when you have Trump, the America First president, who's hostile to immigrants and comes out with xenophobic, Islamophobic statements, perhaps we should not be surprised that New York retaliated by electing a Muslim mayor, a democratic socialist, as we've seen so often in American history. You know, you get an action and then you get an equal and opposite reaction, and probably worth seeing Mandani in that context.
And yet, when they met, they seemed to get on like a house on fire.
That was funny, wasn't it? Yeah, and there's just been some reporting the last few days that Trump said something along the lines of, you know, you're even better looking than I expected. and it really was a sort of mutual charm offensive. They seemed to get on very well. Maybe part of that was they're both New Yorkers, both from Queens, certainly both political outsiders. And Trump seemed to respect Mamdani's charisma and charm, and the way he'd run his campaign. And as Mamdani notes, you know, there is an overlap in voters. In his speech again at the inauguration, he mentioned there are some people who voted for Trump and voted for Mamdani because they see them both as change agents dealing with this affordability crisis, albeit in very different ways.
And some of the things that Mamdani has suggested that he's going to do: free childcare, rent freeze, you've talked about, and open city-run grocery stores. And the bill for this is supposedly $10 billion. Where's it going to come from?
Yeah, and the grocery stores, in some quarters, has been overplayed a bit. I think it's only a handful of them, but even so, important symbolically, perhaps. And I think the simplest answer to the question is going to come from increasing taxes on the wealthiest New Yorkers and on corporations. That's the plan, at least. And certainly there was enthusiasm in the crowd for that because they were aware of the incredible inequality in New York, just this yawning chasm. But at the same time, as other ambitious mayors have found, we're probably going to see a lot of vested interests pushing back, and you know, Wall Street and so on, trying to thwart Mamdani. You know, a mayor is not all powerful; he'll have to get some of this through the state assembly, and that's going to be a real struggle. And you know, I wonder how long the honeymoon will last before we get that sort of reality check of you know, it's very difficult to get some of his proposals through.
And much like in London, whenever the subject of taxing the super rich comes up, we're threatened that those very same people will leave en masse. And New Yorkers, the super rich representatives in New York have said the same about there. Is there any evidence that the billionaires are leaving?
Overall, not so much, or certainly less than expected. There definitely were those predictions, and I think I saw one or two anecdotal reports about rich people fleeing to Florida, which is the obvious place, and a lot of older New Yorkers do retire there because of the weather, and of course, Florida now has that symbolism of it being Donald Trump's adopted state. He, too, of course, a former New Yorker. And so you're kind of making a political statement by joining the MAGA crowd there. But actually, overall, at least so far, there has not been the mass exodus expected. Maybe some people love New York too much. Maybe they regard Mamdani as just another passing phase. You know, these mayors do come and go. Again, you know, 6 months or a year from now, if he's actually successful in raising these taxes, maybe some of them will have second thoughts. Maybe there are even some who think there's you know, justification in it.
Well, I've heard that estate agents in London's super prime districts are getting a lot of calls from people not necessarily in New York, but people in America. So if you know, if we lose some here, then others are on the way. Let's talk about Tatiana Schlossberg, the granddaughter of John F. Kennedy. She died at a very young age just recently.
Yeah, a very sad story. She was an environmental journalist, a daughter of Caroline Kennedy, who was the daughter of President John F. Kennedy. She died on Tuesday at the age of 35 from leukemia, and she had brought this to general attention in an essay in the New Yorker magazine in November, which got phenomenal readership. It was entitled "A Battle with My Blood," and talked about her struggle with cancer. And you know, she found out about it just after birth of her daughter in May 2024, full of very poignant observations, including the realization that, you know, her children may never remember her. So there has been, you know, expressions of grief on her behalf, and also it once again, you know, spotlights the Kennedy family. If you just take Caroline Kennedy, for example, who's a former ambassador to Australia and Japan. Of course, she was only 5 years old when her father, JFK, was assassinated. She was 10 when her uncle, Robert F. Kennedy, was assassinated.
And as you,
brother.
Yes, sorry to interrupt, but as you would expect, Donald Trump sent his kind words and commiserations. I'm joking, of course. He shared posts criticizing her family for supposedly neglecting the Kennedy Center that he had just put his name on.
Yeah, pretty incredible. I mean, just a week or two after Trump wrote that message about Rob Reiner, the film director, being a victim of Trump derangement syndrome, and there was no evidence for that. And even for some Trump sympathizers, that was a bit too far. And again, yeah, at a moment of grief for the family, Trump stepped in, you know, with these comments, as you say, criticizing the Kennedys over the Kennedy Center. And that remains a big issue in the U.S. because, as we know, Trump just slapped his name on it, tried to turn it into the Trump Kennedy Center.
Yes, but, his name must go first, of course, above the title, like Tom Cruise. David, I've just run out of time, but thanks so much for that. That is David Smith, the Washington correspondent for The Guardian, the Washington bureau chief there. Now, if you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Global Player or the new LBC app, where you can read and watch the latest from LBC. All of the A to Z of 2025, that's all up there. Ask for Nick Abbott, the whole show podcast. It's exclusive to Global Player and the new LBC app. If you stick around at 4, it's Ian Payne. But first, it's Clive Ball.
Nick, thank you. Coming up after the news at 1, Keir Starmer is being urged to do a fundamental reset for the new year. Is it too late for another reset? Or could a new direction, better communication, change Labour's fortunes, do you think? And as of yesterday, you can no longer post a letter in Denmark. The official mail service has closed and post boxes have been removed. Can you see this happening here as well? And we'll keep an eye on the snow and the ice with that amber weather warning. And later on, we'll take a look at how AI will develop over the coming year and appear in more and more of our devices, whether we want it or not. That and much more after the news at 1 on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, a vigil's been held in a Swiss ski resort after at least 40 people were killed and 115 injured in a New Year's bar fire. It broke out in the popular ski town of Crans-Montana last night. Times journalist David Chazan says the vast majority of partygoers were teenagers.
There have been awful scenes of distress outside the bar with parents racing up desperate for information about their children. And we saw really sad messages being posted on social media with families appealing for any information about their loved ones.
A vaccine which protects against chickenpox is being rolled out on the NHS for the first time. From today, it'll be offered to babies aged between 12 and 18 months across the UK as part of the combined MMR jab. Chickenpox is usually mild, but can be fatal. More than 41,000 migrants crossed the English Channel in small boats in 2025. It's the second highest annual figure on record. In November, the Home Secretary announced changes, including making it easier to deport people. Danny Shaw, former adviser to Yvette Cooper, says another scheme is currently too small to make much difference.
The returns deal with France, the one-in-one-out deal, very small numbers at the moment, only around 150 people who've arrived on small boats have been sent back to France, and 135 have come in the other direction. That could work if it's ramped up significantly.
A prolonged cold snap is starting, according to forecasters. Many of us will see some snow at some stage, with the focus being on northern Scotland today. Meteorologist John Hammond says it's a bit of a shock to the system.
The default these days is that winters are mild, and this has been yet another, you know, mild start to another potentially mild winter. When we look back at the stats for the winter come the springtime, it would be surprising if we've had